Okay, let's resume. The time is 4:38 p.m. The next item on the board's agenda is 2005-2006, number 124, protection from demonstrations at memorial services. First, I'd like to hear from proponents, see if the board has any questions from the measures. Is a representative of the proponents here? No. Please come forward and identify yourself, if you would, for the record, please, and who you represent.
My name is William Gondrez. I represent myself.
Before I ask the board if they have questions, is there anything in particular that you wish to tell the board about the measure as far as our making sure we understand the measure?
No, sir.
Any questions for Mr. Gondrez? Ms. Eubanks?
It appears that there were some changes made between the version that was filed for review and comment and the version filed for the title board. Would you say that all those changes were made in response to the questions that were posed at review and comment?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a question about the top of page 2, the statement that cemeteries, churches, mortuaries, mosques, synagogues, or any other facilities or areas are protected for all who participate. I'm assuming the reference to any other facilities basically means any other similar facilities, similar to cemeteries, churches, et cetera?
No, sir. It's the definitions on the front. Under number 4, sub number 4, and it specifies what other facilities are.
Good, thank you. I see that.
I have a question about just what is meant by memorial service. Is it similar to funerals, that kind of thing, or
yes, sir.
Do you have something specific in mind?
It might be a cremated body, which you necessarily wouldn't have a funeral service for, but you would have a memorial service for the urn of ashes that you would have.
Okay.
So there are some burials of deceased members that are scattered in the mountains or the ocean or whatever. And you would have a memorial service first for the family members, and then you would do whatever the deceased would have wanted done with their ashes. That's what it meant.
Any other questions? If not, let's turn to consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Any discussion by the board? I don't have anyone else signed up to testify on the measure, but if anybody wishes to address the board on either single subject or later staff drafts, let me know. Discussion about single subject? Ms. Eubanks?
I think the measure contains a single subject and that the board should proceed in setting a title.
I agree. Is there a motion?
I would so move.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen in the room. Mr. Gondrez, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
Yes, sir. I did study the staff draft, and it pretty much shows the essence of what the measure is.
Ms. Eubanks?
I'll get us started. In terms of the statement of single subject, I'm a little perplexed with the term to use. I mean, right now the staff draft talks about demonstrations. But as I read the measure, it seems like there's other types of activities that people are also being protected from, protests, picketing, disturbances. And in terms of trying to find a term that incorporates all of that, I don't know whether demonstrations, if you think of it in a more generic sense rather than as a defined term in the measure, whether that takes care of it, whether a disturbance may be more encompassing of all of the different, I mean, anything that would disturb a service perhaps might be a better way to go. I do also think that I think the title board has gotten away from making specific reference to specific articles of the Constitution, and so at the proper time I'd move to remove the reference to Article 18. But in terms of the statement of single subject, whether it's concerning protection from disturbances at funerals, it seems like funeral as a defined term is pretty broad in terms of including the memorial service, ceremonies, processions, types of things, and so perhaps we're okay with that phrase, but it's just a lot, a very broad scope of this measure, and I just want to make sure that we have a statement of single subject that encompasses all of it.
It sounded to me like there were three issues there. One is deleting the specific article reference.
Correct.
And I think that's pretty non-controversial. I'll just move to strike that right now.
I'll second that. Any objection, Mr. Gondres? That's
no
pretty
objection.
Normal. So.
Of course not.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
Moving on to the more substantive issues, the first one is the use of the word demonstrations. And it seems to me that I don't think demonstrations is misleading. It might protests or disruption might be a little bit broader than demonstrations, but I'm not really sure that any of them are. They seem to be on the similar circles on a Venn diagram, if not the same ones. I don't think there's anything wrong with demonstrations, necessarily. I do wonder if we should add memorial services somehow to the concept of funerals for the reasons we discussed. It's a captures different things, I think. And I know there's a general reluctance to add a conjunction like and to the statement, but I don't see the problem with adding funerals and memorial services, or memorial services might be a little bit safer and actually more accurate. So I may move to add after funerals or memorial services.
I think I would support that. As you said, I'm concerned about conjunctions, but I think those are related. I think there's not one word that captures. I think there is one concept here, but I don't think there's one word.
Right.
So I think I'm moderately comfortable doing that.
After services. Yeah.
Right. I personally might prefer the word "and" here, but I don't know.
And is that okay, Mr. Domenico?
Either one is fine with me, I think.
May I make a comment?
Yes, sir.
I would take the comma away from funerals.
Yeah, I think that's the... She deleted that. Thanks.
Oh, you
did. I think it's marked.
It's just hard to see.
I do think the word demonstrations is questionable, but I think it's probably the best word, and I don't have a better one, so...
And in the definition of the, in the measure, it spells it out, too.
So that change would be, the single subject would read, concerning the protection from demonstrations at funerals and memorial services.
No protection? Could it be just concerning protection from?
I would suggest removing the word "the" at the beginning. Would that be your motion, Mr. Domenico?
I'll move to make those changes.
I'll second that. Further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubank?
I'm not sure that having the phrase defining certain terms really imparts any particular information to the voters, and so I would move to remove that phrase from the title.
I'll second that. Further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other suggested changes to the staff draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action number 124.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The time is 4:50 p.m. The next item on the board's agenda is number 139, Domestic Partnerships. For the record, the time is 4:51 p.m. I'd first like to hear from a representative of the proponents. Mr. Ruskin, if you could come forward, introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Ruskin. I'm with the law firm of Isaacson Rosenbaum. I represent the proponents. Matter of disclosure. I've had issues with each one of you. Mr. Domenico actually is exempt, as is Gomez, but the rest of you,
a lot of issues.
Hasn't been pretty. That having been said and on the public record, I'm sure I'll have an issue with Mr. Domenico at some point in our careers.
Look forward to it.
As of this time, I think that other than the things that are public record, there's nothing that relates to an initiative, initiative 139 or any similar topic that would.
Thank you. Before I turn to board questions, is there anything in particular you wanted to tell the board about the measure?
Well, I'd be happy to describe the measure. The measure establishes domestic partnerships. It provides for licensing or requires a licensing process as part of the criteria, and also requires the General Assembly to enact certain legislation that is consistent with the responsibilities, benefits, and protections, as well as the licensing provisions in House Bill 06-1344, which, as of the point that this was submitted to the title board, had been enacted by the General Assembly, and therefore we changed the language, which had originally been written to say that it simply passed the House and the Senate. I would also note, because I know it's of interest to the board, that several other changes were made as a part of the dialogue that occurred with the legislative staff. And if you want me to go through them, I can, but I assume that you probably want to make hay, so unless you have specific questions.
Unless there's questions, we can probably skip that. Okay. Any questions from the board on the measure? And I'm sorry, what's the status of House Bill 1344 now? It's passed both houses.
Passed both houses. It will be on the ballot in November.
What's a referred measure?
It's a referred measure.
Right. That's right. Well, if there aren't any questions, let's turn to consideration of the single subject requirement of the Constitution discussion by the board. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify, I don't think. Any discussion by the board on single subject, or is there a motion? Ms. Eubanks?
I believe that proposed initiative 139 constitutes a single subject and that the board should proceed to set a title.
I agree. I'll so move.
So move.
And Ms. Eubanks moves. I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez is displaying the staff draft on the screen in the room. Mr. Gerskin, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
I have. I appreciate the opportunity to review it before the meeting. I guess what I would tell you is that I don't have any problems with the staff draft as written. I might suggest to you that the clause on lines 6 and 7, directing the legislature to enact legislation by May 1st, 2007, the date isn't all that critical, and the next clause refers to implementing legislation. And so if you're of the mind, I think you could probably strike the clause that reads directing the General Assembly to enact legislation necessary to implement the amendment no later than May 1st, 2007, comma, and not really lose anything. But on the other hand, if you retained it, we would have no objection to that.
Banks.
So, Mr. Gruskin, are you suggesting that the last phrase about it being consistent with House Bill 1344, that remains, or that also goes out?
No, that would remain.
That would remain. Okay.
I think that's a material provision.
I don't think the date is important in line 7. I don't know whether the direction of the General Assembly is important, but just for the sake of discussion, I'll move that the board delete that entire clause that reads directing the General Assembly to enact legislation necessary to implement the amendment no later than May 1st, 2007. See if there's a second.
I'll second it. Although I agree that as much detail as is in that phrase probably isn't necessary, something that we maybe could do, because to talk about the implementing legislation without the reference to who's responsible, whether perhaps if we strike this phrase, that in the next phrase where it talks about requiring and have it read something like requiring implementing legislation be enacted consistent with the responsibility, so it imparts that idea that there is the requirement of implementing legislation and that it be consistent with 1344.
Good point. Perhaps as part of my motion then, in line 7, after legislation insert, or after the word requiring the implementing legislation insert be enacted. Oh, sorry, strike. I'm sorry, I guess I'm not doing this very efficiently.
Strike shall?
Yeah, strike shall, leave be. Strike that, leave be, and then after the word be, insert enacted.
Make one suggestion.
Yes, sir.
What if you just combine the two phrases? So it said directing the General Assembly to enact legislation, implementing legislation consistent with the responsibilities.
Okay. Can you back up, Sessing? So, directing the General Assembly to enact legislation.
And then strike necessary and through shall be.
I don't want to add implementing legislation.
Oh. Well, the suggestion has been made that maybe you would strike. Through the word enact and strike legislation through that on the next line. So it would be directing the General Assembly to enact implementing legislation. Strike shall be consistent with.
Okay. So here, I'll make a motion and correct me if I'm not capturing the suggestion. So I'll move that you strike after enact down to the next line to after that, right? Strike that, and then strike shall be at the end of that line.
I'll second that. And for the record, my previous motion is withdrawn. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
On line 9, should House Bill be capitalized? It looks, I mean, I know generally we don't capitalize a lot of things, but that looks strange that way. And so I would move that we capitalize House and Bill.
And as a note, I think that the drafter, that the staff recommended, because I hadn't capitalized it, that change
was
made.
Okay.
And so that has been made in the text.
Okay.
You need moral support for your motion.
Moral support. Did I move that?
Yes.
Okay.
I seconded
okay.
it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
I think it's consistent with the practice of the title board. I don't believe we usually include a description of legislative declarations in the title. And so I would suggest removing the language that starts on line 2, specifying that domestic partnerships do not affect the institution of marriage between one man and one woman, because that statement is in the legislative declaration of the measure.
May I speak to that? I don't know that we have a huge desire one way or the other, but as somebody who's taken his licks on this issue, I will tell you that in the decision on numbers 227 and 228, which was a ban on gay marriage that was proposed in year 2000, one of the challenges was to the inclusion of certain language from the legislative declaration. Specifically, that measure provided that as a matter of public policy, the people of the state of Colorado choose to preserve the unique social institution of marriage as being between a man and a woman. And on behalf of my clients, I challenged that language, saying that the whole social institution of marriage and inclusion of that legislative intent was inappropriate. Catchphrase. Supreme Court of Colorado disagreed with me vehemently in a written decision, the good old days, and found that that language was just fine and that the title was not at all prejudicial. So I think there's actually some pretty good precedent that having that language in this kind of an initiative with particularly this rhetoric is not offensive to.
And understanding that argument, just from a title board perspective, I don't want to start getting in, being in the position of for every measure that comes before us with the legislative declaration, trying to decide whether or not verbiage from the legislative declaration should be included in the title. And I think that's consistent with the past practice. Now, obviously, the past previous title boards have perhaps taken a different approach. But I think of late, this title board has not included statements of legislative declaration in the title. And so I would still stand by my suggestion to remove it.
This is an issue I probably should research more before I start discussing it, but it seems to me that in some cases, and this seems to be one of them to me, the legislative finding is actually one of the important objects that the initiative is seeking to achieve, is to make this statement. I certainly share your concern that we not get into every time having to decide how much of a statement of policy we want to get in. It does seem to me that if the people adopt this initiative, that the finding is an important statement, and it might be misleading not to have it in there. And I'm not committing to that position yet, but I do think that it may be misleading without it. Although I also think that using the words, if it's left in, I don't like the word specifying, personally. That also seems a bit confusing and misleading. But if we decide to take it out, we don't have to deal with that. So I'll leave that until we decide on whether to take it out completely. But I would leave it in.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. DiMenico raises a good point. There's no way that this is a singular debate. There are going to be, as the board knows better, lots of issues in and around, lots of ballot measures in and around this general topic. And it would strike me that I, too, don't know whether or not this is kind of the ultimate issue of ultimate interest to the public. This may be one of those cases where you err on the side of providing them with more information, knowing that the court has said that this particular kind of statement about the institution of marriage between a man and a woman is not prejudicial to the voters. And the court, as Mr. Kneiser has pointed out several times in our briefs, is bound by stare decisis, and therefore find it difficult to imagine that they would depart from the ruling in 227 and 228. So I'd agree. I'd also agree with Mr. DiMenico that if you decide to retain that language, its specifying is a little strange for the context in which this provision is.
Would declaring be a better word?
Declaring or stating, perhaps.
Well, opposing views in a way here, but I tend to agree with both of them. I think as a general principle, I agree with Ms. Eubanks. And I'm having some trouble deciding whether or not this is an exception to that general principle, and I probably am tipping that way. As Mr. Gruskin said, maybe erring on the side in this case of recognizing maybe this is an important declaration or finding or statement or something, that, again, this may be totally inconsistent, but I think I'd err on the side of leaving it there in the belief that actually there is some precedent for supporting it if it were to be challenged, which does somewhat surprise me, but I'm assuming Mr. Gruskin is totally accurate that similar circumstances, this kind of language has been upheld. So,
can I just, to the extent that would be helpful, the ballot title in question back in 2000 read, shall there be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the criteria for valid marriages in Colorado and in connection therewith expressing the public policy of the state of Colorado that the social institution of marriage between a man and a woman be between a man and a woman. So that's the language that's been written.
And maybe that suggests how I could articulate possibly a rationale for leaving this in. I mean, I think our difficulty with legislative declarations generally is they tend to include the arguments for a measure, and which the title board should not do. Here, I think it's a little different than the argument. I mean, I think it kind of goes to the heart of the issue for some people, and to the extent that this measure is, if the voters approve it, it becomes a declaration. That's accurately stated in the title, that domestic partnerships do not affect the institutions of marriage between one man and one woman. And I think maybe voters should know that's what they are going to be finding if they approve this. Sort of like in the measure or the case cited by Mr. Gruskin, it's a declaration of public policy. It's more than a reason. Again, I'm struggling with how to distinguish these, but because I absolutely agree with Ms. Eubanks, generally I think this is a bad idea. But here I think maybe it's probably something we should do.
And we are not asking that the other legislative declaration be included in the title, which I think, frankly, is different because it contextually isn't necessarily part of the debate on the other measures. And, frankly, is one of those things that was put in there so that the courts would establish or attribute the appropriate value that the voters had for enacting this, which is different than kind of a legal status issue.
Well, at this point, I'd
leave it in, but Mr. Domenico.
I think you've expressed my concern quite well, and I agree with Ms. Eubanks and the general proposition that this is that including declarations is a bad idea. But I think the line that you've drawn between arguments and declarations about a policy that sort of a finding is an important one and may be helpful. And I also think that ties in to why I'm uncomfortable with specifying, and perhaps we should use declaring or something along those lines to make it clearer that if you vote for this measure, it will have the effect of declaring that domestic partnerships do not affect the institution of marriage. And I do think that's an important thing for people to know when they consider this measure.
I'll just suggest or move, I guess, that we strike the word specifying and substitute the word declaring.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Let me ask Mr. Gruskin about the expression of the single subject in lines 1 and 2. And I made a note to ask about this, and I'm not quite sure why, but I'm wondering about the choice of the word establishment, whether it's better to say concerning the establishment of domestic partnerships or concerning the recognition of domestic partnerships.
And actually, we had a discussion about that with staff, because originally subsection 3 was entitled recognition, but the substance of subsection 3 dealt with establishing.
Uh-huh.
So the question was, how are you recognizing it if there isn't specific language in there, in the provision itself, about recognition, and what does that mean? And so we changed that to make them parallel and make it clear that this has to do with the establishment of that legal status.
Yeah, it seems like the title is faithful to the measure. Any other changes to the staff draft? Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So moved.
Eubanks has moved that. I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 139, and the time is 5:14 p.m. Thank you. Next item on the board's agenda is number 138, end-of-life decision-making authority. Again, for the record, the time is 5:14 p.m. Mr. Gruskin, I think you are representing proponents here as well, so if you will introduce yourself for the record and give us your thoughts.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Ruskin. I'm with the law firm of Isaacs and Rosenbaum, and I represent the proponents in this matter.
Anything in particular we need to know about this measure before I turn to questions?
I think that it is relatively self-explanatory. I would note for the board that it was significantly changed after the meeting with Legislative Review and the Legislative Review and Comment hearing. Primarily, there were questions. The original measure was drafted to prohibit the state from restricting the capacity of, what was a defined term as certain authorized individuals from making or participating in these decisions. And the staff appropriately pointed out that, number one, the state was an ambiguous term. Restricting the ability was also ambiguous, that it was unclear how the proposed measure would interact with existing statutes. And there are several that were cited at the review and comment hearing. And that by creating a constitutional protection without any reference to existing law, that it was not clear what would happen where there were conflicts either among the decision makers or between the patient and any of the decision makers at a later time. And so, in light of those various comments, we took a redraft of this measure that is virtually the same as what you see before you, and discussed it. We literally read it into the record and discussed it with the staff in terms of addressing the various comments that they made. So I know that it is significantly different, and I'd be happy, although at 5:15 I doubt that you want me to read the transcript so that you know how we responded to each of those questions. But I would also, you know, I don't mean to be flip about it. I would be happy to walk you through why specific changes were made. But on a general basis, I can tell you that the lack of clarity that was written into the original draft was so problematic that the ultimate goal of the proponents, which was to protect the capacity of patients, their families, and other interested persons under current law, was not clear. And only by rewriting it, I believe, in the way that we have, did we make the intent and at least intended meaning of the original draft clear enough so that the voters would be able to know what they were doing and so that we didn't create conflicts with existing law.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Gruskin? It did look to me, and I did wonder about that. In this particular case, I looked at at the review and comment memo and looked at the differences, and it at least a quick review indicated to me that the changes appeared to be in response to a number of the questions in the memo. And I mean, I am somewhat concerned about the fact that it's so substantially changed. And yet, when I actually compare the two, the original proposal to this, it seems like I can make the case that there are specific questions that drove those changes. So, but
and if I might add, the original version had a number of definitions, some of which were taken from existing statutes, some of which were a collapsing of existing statute. Obviously, by saying that the goal of the electorate is to protect the law as it exists, we didn't need to do that anymore. Similarly, to the extent that the legislative declaration had to set the stage for, in essence, drawing a fence around existing law, we had to write that. But as I say, we literally discussed each of these provisions with staff and got their comments as to some comments as to whether or not certain words or provisions were appropriate and or recommended.
Any further questions for Mr. Gruskin?
No. Benico,
on
that?
Oh, no. Okay. Let's turn to the question of whether or not the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Any discussion by the board? Ms. Eubanks?
I believe that proposed initiative 138 contains a single subject. The board should proceed to set a title.
And I will so move.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen in the room. Mr. Gruskin, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
I have. I appreciate the staff providing it prior to hearing. I do have some comments, and let me go through them with you. I think the single subject statement is so broad as to not really represent the measure. This really isn't about medical treatment for adults. It's about end-of-life decision-making about medical treatment for certain adults. So I would suggest to you that the measure is not nearly as broadly crafted as the single subject statement. That's number one. Number two, it seems to me that there are some ways to shorten the language that is currently in there. And let me just tell you what they are so that you know kind of the scope of what I'm talking about. On line 2, where it says, from prohibiting the General Assembly from passing a bill that restricts, I think you could just make that restricting. It's fine the way it is, but I think that you could shorten it. It's not critical. On line 3, where it talks about the rights of authorized decision makers as they exist on May 5th, 2006, well, authorized decision makers is a term that, frankly, doesn't appear in the measure and I think is likely to raise some concern because the question would be, who are those authorized decision makers? Is it government, which we made very clear in our review and comment hearing it is not? I appreciate the fact that the date is in there to reflect that it's kind of existing law, but I might make that phrase read something like this. Prohibiting the General Assembly from restricting the rights under current law of adults, their families, and other interested persons, and then pick up with to direct the manner and extent.
Read slower for us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Restricting the rights under
the rights under current law, because we use the reference to current law in the legislative declaration, and strike authorized decision makers as they exist on May 5th, 2006, and insert instead adults, their families, and other interested persons, and pick up with to direct the manner and extent of medical treatment for adults who, and then I think I would, I don't have a problem with it, but decisional capacity is a term of art that's defined as not being able to provide informed consent to or refusal of medical treatment. So I think what I would say instead is I'd strike the words lack the decisional capacity to and insert the word cannot and insert the word such before medical treatment. So if I were the title board, the title would read something like this. I mean, understanding that I've done this in my own little cocoon. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning end-of-life decision-making about medical treatment for certain adults, in connection therewith, prohibiting the General Assembly from restricting the rights under current law of adults, their families, and other interested persons to direct the manner and extent of medical treatment for adults who cannot provide informed consent to or refusal of such medical treatment. Period.
Mr. Gruskin, could you, in terms of the single subject statement, could you read that portion again concerning...
Concerning end of life decision-making about medical treatment for certain adults. And I struggled with that, certain adults, because what I'd really like to do is put in there who, you know, cannot provide informed consent to or refusal of medical treatment. But it seemed a little long. But I'd be happy with monkeying with that. I'm not, frankly, tied to any of that language. But the measure is entitled End-of-Life Decision-Making Authority, so it seems to me not to be an incorrect statement that that is the single subject of the measure.
Mr. Grishin, in terms of using the term end-of-life decision-making, I mean, end-of-life decision-making is referred to in the legislative declaration, but it isn't actually in the subsection 2 of the measure. Is that correct?
That's correct. There may be a better phrase. I just haven't been able to come up with it. And it seemed to me to use something kind of vague or wishy-washy, like concerning certain medical treatment for certain adults. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you do want people to have a sense of what this is about. But or I suppose you could say concerning medical treatment for adults who cannot provide informed consent to or refusal of such treatment.
In terms of describing the adults, would it be possible, and I don't know if this would be an accurate term, in terms of incapacitated adults? I mean, because they're not...
I thought about that. That's a really good idea, but here's part of the issue. One of the protections that's provided is the right of any adult to execute a durable medical power of attorney before they become incapacitated. And therefore, it would not truly be accurate, because that the whole idea there is to preemptively decide what your medical treatment is going to be. Now, I suppose you could argue that it's only effective at the point at which you become incapacitated, but I just didn't know how close to come to the edge of that particular cliff.
Just to get my thoughts on the record, I agree. I think that the current statement is far too broad, and I think that end-of-life decision-making about language is necessary, not just a good idea. We might tweak it a little bit, but I think something along those lines is necessary. And given that this is a relatively short title, I think using certain may get us where we need to get. If this were a page and a half and you had to look on the second page to find out what those certain adults were, I would
probably want to spell it out above, but I don't think I have a problem in this one, given that it's only a couple of lines down, defining those certain adults, given that we can't use incapacitated. So I guess I would move that we at least insert end-of-life decision-making about between concerning and medical on line one. Yes. And then also insert certain before adults. About, sorry.
Was it your intent, Mr. Domenico, to have the word authority there?
No, just yeah, only about, right, okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't feel strongly either way.
I do, based on Ms. Eubank's comment, I'm a little confused about end of life. What's the justification for including end of life there? I mean, I know it's referred to in the legislative declaration, but the operative provision in subsection 2 didn't seem to refer to that, unless I missed it. I mean, it seemed like subsection 2 could apply to situations other than end of life situations. Even if that's the primary purpose here, I'm just wondering if we can say end of life, restrict the single subject to end of life decision making, or whether we just need to say concerning decision making. Mr. Gruskin, any?
Oh, this is one where I'm glad you're on the board. You know, I think it's in the measure. It's pretty clear that this deals with end-of-life decision-making. I suppose that there are instances, obviously, where one has either certain orders given for him or her, or gives certain orders, and then your life doesn't end. So I suppose that's true. It may be, then, that concerning decision-making about medical treatment for adults who cannot consent to such treatment may be a more narrow way of saying and using the words of the operative provision what you want to say.
And maybe I'm getting confused, but it just seemed like, you know, an adult who's in an automobile accident and is unconscious temporarily might be a situation where it's not an end-of-life situation, but at that, while they're unconscious, they may not be able to make decisions, and somebody else is making it for them. And this measure seems to prohibit the General Assembly from restricting the rights of those other people from making those decisions. But clearly not an end-of-life, as it turns out at least, not an end-of-life situation.
Right. I think thoughtful arguments can be made for both ways of stating it. And you know, on behalf of the proponents, I tell you, there's no magic to putting end of life in there, even though I said, suggested it to you. And that, so if you decided to take that out, as long as the fundamental issue that I raised and Mr. Domenico spoke to, that we make the single subject topic communicative, as long as we get there,
I think if we do that, we may have to get rid of certain and put in some more detail on the adults up front, sort of thinking out loud. It just say decision-making about medical treatment for certain adults seems
not quite to capture subject, even though I just said a few minutes ago that I thought the adults were pretty well described further down. But I think I'm being won over to your view about end of life may not be the, may be inappropriate to include up there. But then I just wonder if it's, if it, more detail if we take that out.
Well, could you say concerning decision making about medical treatment for adults who cannot provide informed consent to or refusal of medical treatment?
That's what I think. If you take out end of life, I would probably think that would be a better way to do it.
And then what you've done is, I mean, the compensating language that you pointed to was at the end. You pushed it to the beginning, and then you don't have to have it at the end, I think, although.
Let's try that.
That's a good idea.
do that.
So what are we trying?
So strike end of life, decision making about medical treatment for, and then Mr. Grushkin, you had one run at it.
Adults who cannot provide informed consent to or refusal of such treatment. Or refusal of such treatment. And while I know that the board, as was pointed out in a previous matter, is concerned about conjunctions, it seems to me consent to and refusal of are two sides of precisely the same coin. And only describe, if you only describe one of those, you would only be talking about one kind of patient.
Agree.
Or what should be one kind of treatment. This is not two independent concepts.
Mr. Banks?
I agree with Mr. Grushkin in terms of the original statement of single subject. I don't think cut it. I, too, was uncomfortable with the end-of-life reference, and so I'm much more comfortable with this just because, although understanding the context as laid out in the legislative declaration, I think that subsection 2 is the heart of the measure, and it makes no reference to or limitation to just end-of-life medical decisions. So I'm much more comfortable with it this way and with the detail about the types of adults who can't give consent than what he originally suggested.
Shall we pause at that point? Is that your motion, Mr. Domenico?
That's my amended motion. I think I had a motion floating out there that I should withdraw and amend and move that we make these changes.
I second that.
That's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Other changes to the staff draft?
Yeah, well, now we do we want to restate that? I think we need to. Well, there are two issues. One is we've reworded it now, the language about describing which adults it applies to. And the question is if we can, we need to restate it the same, or if we can just say such adults or something along those lines. And
well, so let me sort of start a little earlier up, because I think we can shorten this. I think Mr. Grushkin had some good suggestions. If we go back to line 3, prohibiting the General Assembly from restricting instead of passing a bill that restricts. I think, Mr. Grushkin, you preferred to refer to right instead of rights. Your language referred
to... No, if I said that, I didn't mean to.
Okay.
because they have different, again, it, to some extent, it relates to changing authorized decision makers. There are different rights. There are rights of prospective patients. There's the right of prospective patients. There's the right of family. There's the right of other persons. There's the right of guardians with medical powers. So
I misunderstood. So we'll leave rights. I'm suggesting we leave rights there, then insert where the cursor is under current law. Now, let's see. Now I've got to remember where I am. Instead of referring to the authorized decision makers, I think we want to strike leave of rights under current law of adult. What I'm going to get to is adults, their families, and other interested persons to direct, et cetera. So the right of adults, their families, comma, and other interested persons. Strike everything. Remainder of that line into line 5, all the way up to right after 2006, comma. Strike the comma as well. So let's see if I'm getting close. Prohibiting the General Assembly from restricting the rights under current law of adults, their families, and other interested persons to direct the manner and extent of medical treatment for, and then the question is such adults.
Well, because you referred to adults,
right,
there it may be difficult, but what if to define, it's in essence a defined term, what if you said for adults who lack decisional capacity? Because the measure defines lacking decisional capacity as not being able to provide informed consent or refusal. You've already stated that this is the subject statement, so I think you've communicated that idea. I suppose you could leave it exactly the way it is, too, so that there's no lack of clarity. You're seeking brevity. You know what? It probably makes sense to leave it.
Well, I mean, then you did have, if you're leaving in line 6 and 7 alone, you did have another suggestion about getting rid of this decisional capacity. Just say adults who cannot provide informed consent. That again tracks line what is now line 2.
This is going to sound a little silly. It just seems to me that now that we have that phrase up on line 2, the words, the decisional capacity almost act as a buffer so people don't feel like they've spaced out. They're rereading something they already read. They're having this deja vu experience at the ballot box.
Okay.
But I, you know, that's about
seems
how you
possible.
Feel about it, not what the legal effect is.
I think this is pretty good as is. My only question is whether taking out the date and referring to current law is a good idea. I don't think I have a problem with it, but I just thought I'd see if other people thought current law might be a bit confusing or misleading, given current is undefined. And when people are actually voting on this, will be, I suppose it'll be the same law, but I just thought I'd get people's thoughts on that.
That's a good question. I mean, I think I'm okay with it because it current law is kind of not specified. The concept's there. You read the measure for the details of what current law means. You fixed it in the measure as a previous date. It's not when you're voting on it.
I agree. I would also point out that the legislative declaration, the third sentence, says the voters intend to preserve the rights established by current law and insulate these personal decisions from legislative interference. So there is some reference in the measure to current law. And I would also note that there's a you know, it's not as if you're facing the prospect of a special session where the law will get changed. I suppose
right. It
is possible, but it is highly unlikely. And in a previous case dealing with the auto emissions testing program, there was reference to current law in the title, and the court said when faced with the prospect that at some point law could be changed, the court was unconcerned by that. So I think I'm okay with it.
Mr. Banks?
Mr. Gruskin, do you know, in terms of any legislation that was passed by the General Assembly towards the end of this past legislative session that may still be pending for the governor's approval or disapproval, is there anything out there that you know of that might be construed as affecting the rights of end-of-life decisions?
I was informed that the only bill that even tangentially affected this whole arena were some certain changes to the estate and probate code. The understanding that I am neither an estate nor a probate lawyer, I've looked at that bill and didn't see anything that affected these rights. But, you know, I would have no problem with putting as of May 5th, 2006, as opposed to under current law. I suppose that's probably the safer. That's what I tell my clients to do.
Thanks.
I think that the reference to current law is sufficient. From a voter perspective, I'm not sure that the voters know what the current law is as of May 5th versus May 4th or May 6th. And so having that date in there in terms of the actual measure, I think, may have some impact. But for the voters, I think more that current law, unless something were to change, like you say, special session or whether there was a bill that is now pending but would be after that date even now, I just don't think that's very likely. And so I'm comfortable with the reference to current law.
Any other questions or suggested changes to the staff draft?
One other suggestion I had made is on line 7, as opposed to medical, the word such, because we've used medical treatment earlier in that same phrase.
Okay, I think that makes sense. Do we also want to delete medical?
Yes.
I suppose that takes a motion. I think we already adopted the previous language, previous changes by motion, so I'll move that change.
Second.
Moved and second. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes?
Oh, no.
Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
Could we see it without the changes?
Especially when you have a moment, if you'll just change, turn off the changes. Sorry. And I'll go ahead and read it as it exists at this point for the record. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the decision-making about medical treatment for adults who cannot, two words, provide informed consent to or refusal of such treatment, comma, in connection therewith, comma, prohibiting the General Assembly from restricting the rights under current law of adults, comma, their families, comma, and other interested persons to direct the manner and extent of medical treatment for adults who lack the decisional capacity to provide informed consent to or refusal of such treatment, period.
It cannot be one word.
I would prefer it one word.
I'll move that we make it one word.
I'll second that. Any discussion? All those in Ms. Eubanks? Yes, Mr.
I move.
Okay.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. anything else. So is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as so amended?
So moved.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action number 138. The time is 5:48. Thank you. Let's hold off on 125 until the end. I'm sorry, say that again.
That's 117.
They're not signed up. Is there anybody here on behalf of number 117? Are the proponents represented? Okay. Let's resume. As I announced previously, number 112 and 114 have been withdrawn. We've laid over number 125 till later in the agenda, so that brings us to number 117, severance taxes for public school buildings. For the record, the time is 5:51 p.m., and we'd like to first hear from the proponents. Mr. Rainey, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'll say good afternoon. I'll say good evening. I think we're approaching that, Mr. Hobbs. My name is Ed Ramey from Isaacson Rosenbaum, law partner of the long-winded gentleman who was just here. Also, by way of, I guess we were doing disclaimers, and like my partner, I've been sued by, represented all of you extensively, except Mr. Domenico, and it's nice to meet him this afternoon, and probably primarily Mr. Kneiser. With me also this afternoon, I will ask for the indulgence of the board again, is Mary Wickersham from the Donald K. Foundation, who is the author of not only 117, but the next initiative, 133, and a number of others, a few others, that have been filed during the course of the season on a similar topic, and has an understanding of this way beyond mine. And if we get into difficult questions, as we did last time, particularly courtesy of Ms. Eubanks, I'd like to call Ms. Wickersham up here because she might be able to intelligently answer them.
Okay. Anything in particular to tell us about 117 before I turn to the board for questions?
The only thing I guess I would say initially about 117 is by way of what it's about, and there have been a number of these, and the board recalls had at one point or another 10 or 15 versions floating around at one time or another. Not all submitted for title. The purpose of 117 is the enhancement and reallocation of revenues from the extraction of natural resources in the state, primarily for purposes of benefiting preschool through 12th grade public education and primarily capital construction projects in Colorado. That's basically what it does. There's a little complexity to the operation of it, but it's basically the enhancement and reallocation of revenues. I rather than walk through the provision, and I will alert the board that the title versions, and there were two versions submitted, and we'll certainly discuss that when we get there, but both of those title versions aren't really in sync with the subject of what this initiative does. And we have some extensive changes, which I have a black line version for, but I would direct the board's attention at this point to text of the measure and not the draft titles.
Okay. Are there questions about the measure for Mr. Ramey, Ms. Eubanks?
Or Ms. Wickersham?
You're not even going to try?
I may try, but I saw what happened last time. I think I got into the first frame.
First of all, it appears that there were changes made between the review and comment hearing and what was filed with the title board. And
there were.
Are those in response to questions?
Completely. They were in response to questions and issues raised and discussed at the review and comment session.
Okay. In terms of the specific provisions, and I don't recall this from the earlier measure about use of some of the revenues designated by the measure for preschool programs. It doesn't say public, so I'm assuming this is public or private preschool programs. It's in 2251.5102 subsection 1.
That is correct.
Doesn't specify. Okay. And this may go somewhat to what Mr. Ramey was referring to in terms of the staff draft, perhaps not being reflective of the measure, but the way I saw this measure, it was dealing only with severance tax revenues and not with the federal mineral leasing monies. Is that correct? And that was part of the difficulties? Okay. Yeah, I got confused too. I think, in terms of all the questions you were so patient with me last time, I think everything else made the connection. I think I understand what's going on, so I think that's all my questions right now. Oh, I did have one last thing. I'm sorry. Section 2 of the measure, which is amending 3929.105 down in the new subsection 3 that you added, it talks about the proceeds of the tax established in subsection 2. It seems that subsection 2 is dealing with the tax credit and not the tax, and I'm just looking for clarification as to whether that's a correct reference on subsection where it says the tax established in subsection 2. If you look, for example, at the very end of the language of 2B, it talks about the state severance tax pursuant to subsection 1 of this section. So
I'm not tracking that.
And the reason I'm asking the question is because since that's what I normally refer to as a debrucing provision, that you're saying those revenues are exempt from the state spending limit. Whether we're talking about all state severance tax revenues or just the severance tax revenues that are resulting from the reduction of the tax credit in subsection 2?
The effect is everything.
No, that's fine. I didn't bring it. Got it? Okay.
Probably grab it in Keith's office. Mm-hmm. Keith's office right in the corner, mm-hmm. probably.
An item brought up at review and comment hearing. old version had been like such tax or such tax, and there was a question about what to what tax we were referring. This was an attempt to specify. It was the intent to debruce, as she said, higher severance tax proceeds, not the new revenue, because there was no way to identify the new revenue as opposed to the old revenue.
Okay.
Some deduction is eliminated. But referenced to the subsection that is referenced is the credit.
And then in terms of the effect of the debrucing, the measure is very specific about debrucing it in terms of the state fiscal year spending limit and all. Since some of this money eventually gets distributed to locals, I'm assuming that it's not debruced because it wasn't specified, at least in terms of being subject to school districts' revenue limits and such.
Right. This is another question that came up during the review and comment. What was discussed was whether there had initially been a reference to other districts, the state and other districts. And Ledge Council staff brought up the fact that there would need to be a separate debrucing vote by the school districts to that we couldn't do the same measure debruce state revenue, but other districts besides the state. As it currently stands, it's just debrucing at the state level the state revenue. And then when it's passed down to other districts, it would be under their spending limits such as they are.
Great.
They can debruce it on.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
If not, let's turn to consideration of whether the measure complies with a single subject requirement. If one of the persons signed up to testify, do you want to address the single subject question?
Okay.
Discussion by the board. Ms. Eubanks?
I think the measure constitutes a single subject, and I believe the board should move forward and set a title.
I have to ask another question and hope people can enlighten me. The last sentence of the measure regarding the distribution of monies from the local government severance tax funds seems to me to be a touching. As you may have heard, I have a different line than some other people may, but. The rest of this seems to be about the public school improvement fund, and you do change the amount of money naturally by adding a provision for this public school fund that touches on the local government fund. But then going into how the money is to be spent from the local government fund, I wonder if that's a new subject.
I don't think so. And Mr. Domenico, what section specifically are you referring to?
Well, the very last sentence in the section 3 of the initiative, which would amend 3929108, allocation of severance tax revenues. There's a new sentence at the very end that discusses how local government severance tax funds should be distributed.
We stated that they should give priority to direct distribution to impacted counties and municipalities. I think that's just a qualification of what we want the local governments to do with the enhanced revenues we're providing from the state level. I have listened to you earlier today, and I've caught the theme of what you mean by a separate subject. I would submit that there's a connectivity to this in terms of what we're trying to do, and this is just simply one piece of that. I think historically, I'm trying to think back of other measures. I can't think of one at this particular point where, I suppose I could. The Article 28, which we were arguing, discussing earlier today in connection with proposing to repeal it, addressed campaign finance reforms, for example, contribution limits and reporting requirements in particular at both the state and local levels. And I think the guidance the Supreme Court has given us is that as long as there's a connectivity between what we're doing at both levels, particularly when it's simply informed of a statement of priority such as this, would fall within a single subject.
Well,
but I understand your point as well. I just don't think the court and just the board
is right. My question is, I mean, I think that the single subject requires a little bit more than just a connection between the issues, because I agree with you that there's a connection. Obviously, we're affecting how the money brought in from this this tax is distributed. That's sort of the general idea. But I think, and this is connected to that. I don't deny that. But it seems to me there also has to be something that the single subject is also there to ensure that the voters know what they're voting on and that every word up to here seems to me, up until that point, discusses this school fund. And now, naturally, the rest of that Section 3, I don't have a problem with it, and it affects this other fund. But now, all of a sudden, you've thrown in this new concept that we're directing not just how the school fund will be spent, but and we're also not just affecting how money is, how much money will be coming into this to the local government fund, but we're also directing how that money should be spent. And that, to me, seems like another subject that a voter who read every word up to then would be surprised to find that in this initiative.
I take the point of your argument, and again, we've had discussions like this earlier today, and there's certainly a logic to what you say. I would argue to the contrary, that there wouldn't be a surprise here, that there's certainly not any fraud or voter misleading of voters going on. There's no log rolling going on. It's not like there's a provision here unrelated.
Well, let me ask this then. Why is that in there? Well, I mean, I understand that reading the rest of this, it's we want to get money into this public school fund, and now why add this provision directing that how this other fund should be spent?
Well, we want the money which is coming from the state level going down to the local levels to be used in particular ways. We're trying to specify the benefits that we're trying to provide in the public school system, and this is part of that. And again, Mr. Domenico, again, I don't mean to. I mean, this is a debate I think quite legitimately we could have for hours, where you draw that
Let's
line.
Let's not do that.
And the gray zone, I don't want to either, but the gray zone that we were talking about earlier and where that line falls, I would submit that the way the single subject analysis has developed over the years would put us on the single subject side of that line. And I'm just going back to other types of examples. I think you see something not similar to this, but with a similar state and local nexus in the context of campaign finance reform. There have been measures in the past, and one I recall being very broad, such as a parental rights initiative, which affected a parents' abilities to control education, upbringing, discipline, et cetera, of their children. Multiple, and I remember this one in particular because I challenged that on single subject grounds. And the response to that from the Supreme Court, is my recollection was, no, it's all about parental authority to control the upbringing of your children in a variety of spheres, all of which could have been done separately. This provision could be taken out, I suppose, and done separately. But it's still there. There's a logical relation to it. There is a connectivity to it. And I think where the parameters have been defined rightly or wrongly by the Supreme Court is we're on the single subject side of that line. But I say that without denigrating your argument, because I think it's an argument that I've made myself in the past, unsuccessfully, unless I've made it.
Part of my problem was I didn't see any reference to this provision in the title. was, well, is it addressed in any of the amendments you're going to propose?
No, I'm not sure we would object. I'm going to have to consult a little bit if we wanted to put that in the title and make a reference to it, if there is a disclosure concern. The black line version that I'm going to give you doesn't do that, but that isn't the be-all and end-all.
Okay. I'm done.
Well, and I want to pursue that. I'm unfortunately troubled by this as well, and it may be because I don't understand it well enough, or maybe because we haven't really figured out what the single subject is. So there's my two questions. Number one is, what does this mean? And number two, what is the single subject of the measure? So that'll help me know how this is related to that single subject.
Well, I can, let me try to state again the single subject. I probably will call upon Ms. Wickersham to explain what it means so that I don't get it wrong, since we are making a record here today. Again, the single subject is to enhance and reallocate revenues from a particular source, extraction of natural resources in Colorado, and apply those enhanced revenues as reallocated for the benefit of public education. That, I would state, is a single subject. I could provide greater detail. But the first part of your question, I would like to call on Ms. Wickersham for an explanation.
Well, before she does it, actually, okay. Your description of the single subject had at least two conjunctions in it, and it sounded like multiple subjects to me. Is it possible? I mean, I'm not so troubled by enhance and reallocate. That was one conjunction. But it sounded like the first part of what you were describing was enhance and reallocate revenues from a source. And then it was, and also to take those revenues and support public education or something like that.
No, well, I didn't. I did say that, and perhaps I put too many words into it. It's really the enhancement and the reallocation. The reallocation has to have a purpose. We're reallocating it for something, not just in the air. And the additional wording that I gave you was simply what it was being reallocated to: public education. Those.
I mean, it's critical to me because, with respect to this issue, because if the measure is about revenues from a general source, then this provision might deal with what you do with those revenues. That's okay. But if the measure is about more about funding for education, then I do have trouble understanding how this provision has anything to do with that.
No, it is the way you stated it first is correct. The point of this is to enhance revenues, of course. But then we have to do something with it.
Okay.
And the measure specifies what we want to do. But it is a revenue enhancement and reallocation measure. The way you stated it, Mr. Hobbs, initially, I think that's the correct way, and I probably threw too many words inartfully in my description a moment ago, but it is a revenue enhancement and reallocation.
Okay.
The rest is just simply saying what we want to do.
And I may want to come back to that, but maybe then moving to Ms. Wickersham, perhaps I want to understand what it means. Make sure I understand what it means. I'm not sure I do. So what does this mean?
What does that sentence mean?
But yeah, I mean, just shall give priority to direct distribution to impacted counties. What is that, practically speaking, what effect does that have compared to current law?
Well, I mean, in current law, this is meant to develop a revenue source, and much in the same way that the tobacco tax did or referendum C did. Or in both of those cases, the spending programs were multiple and unrelated. And so the concept was a single revenue source. The actual effect that this sentence has is, of course, open to legislative interpretation. It was meant to be so, but that particular fund in current law is divided between direct distribution to affected local governments and energy impact assistance fund that's administered by the Department of Local Affairs in an 85 15 split, Department of Local Affairs program and the director. So the concept with this sentence is to give potentially, again, open to legislative interpretation, more funding directly to.
And it really doesn't have anything to do with school funding.
Not in the sorts of the mm-hmm. you know, essentially there are three funds that are referenced in the distribution of the Department of Natural Resource Fund, this fund, and then the fund, the public school improvement fund, and in that the public school improvement fund deals with, but just we felt that. Just saying the money was going into the fund wasn't when we that we wanted to allocate the money to various programs, and just saying it goes into a fund doesn't necessarily say what it's to be spent on. So.
Ms. Eubank?
I think it depends on how you view the single subject, and I could probably give you some more ammunition if you want to think of, you know, single subject as more education funding, because I think not only does this provision that you're referring to at the end of 3929108 raise that issue, but also the debrucing provision, because that debruces all state severance tax revenues, which is spent for multiple purposes and not just that portion that's going to the education fund created by the measure. But I do think that if you think of it, the single subject of the measure as dealing with severance tax revenues, that everything within the measure deals with that single subject. Now, whether it's enhancement, that sort of thing, I think that's still subject to debate. But I think in terms of the general subject matter, at least in my mind, of being severance tax revenues, even though some of it's distributed to locals, you're debrucing all of it for state fiscal spending purposes, that sort of thing, it still is, you're dealing with sort of the pot of severance tax revenues. But, you know, I can see, you know, when you view it a different way, but I think it's consistent with a broader statement and similar to our earlier discussion in talking about, like, petitions, you know, it's a matter of degree, and the court has said that you can have a general, broad subject that deals with various aspects of that subject, and I think that's what you've got here.
Ms. Eubanks, I mean, that is much better stated than we stated it. And again, I think the analysis for the comparison that Ms. Wickersham made is apt here. We are focusing on the revenues. I think that's critical.
I mean, that's not. There are two sections 2 and 3 of the measure are about, well, part of section 3, but all of section 2 and part of section 3 are about the revenue. But I mean, there's a detailed section 1 about how the money is to be spent, and then that one last sentence, which is another broad, as you say, that one's much more open to legislative interpretation. But I mean, I again, you can raise the level of generality and everything will fit into a single subject. I wonder if we had a measure that laid out in detail the way section 1 of this does for the school fund, the sorts of the way that the money from the local government fund would be spent and the state severance tax fund, those would all still fit under presumably the single subject of severance tax revenues, but there you would have three incredibly, well, maybe not incredibly, three detailed provisions dealing with three separate funds in some detail, and yes, they would fit under a certain level of generality, but I wonder if they might not fit under another one. And the fact that this deals with one more generally than the other doesn't seem to me to change the fact that if you move the level of generality down, it's still a different subject. I mean, if this were not so general and were a detailed description, I think it would be more might be more obvious that this causes single subject problems, and I don't think the fact that it leaves some of it general means it's not a separate subject. But that's I'm starting to get the feeling I have an idiosyncratic view of this, and I'm sure someday the Supreme Court will tell me that I do. But
you know, I guess I mean in part response to that, I'm not sure, given the way. Level of generality within what I would call the same subject is going to make that much difference. Could have been a lot more detailed. I'm not sure that would have created, could create more single subject problems as long as we're under the same umbrella.
No, I'm agreeing with you on that. My point is that if you move the level of generality of the subject, what you call the single subject, to a more narrow definition, then the fact that this is not specific, this provision, doesn't alter the analysis. It all turns on how general you define the single subject. So I think we agree on that. Okay. It's just a matter of where the how general that subject is before it crosses the line.
I guess I agree with you there, and again, the parallel and generality. Again, over arguments that I've made, which parallel ones that you're stating, they have been told by the Supreme Court about these subjects. And I think the analysis, I don't know if it was Mr. Hobbs or somebody read earlier today, is the court is looking at surprise or actual lack of connectivity. Lack of connectivity is not the only. But it's one that seems, when we get into a discussion like this, which I would submit that the court has come down and said, that's what saves it. That's what makes it. Campaign finance reform. I know I'm rambling a bit now, but the local changes at this for disclosure at the local level and the impact of connected to the overall state line. Limits and so forth. That was the conclusion, though I think the debate such as we're having now.
Thank you.
Mr. Gessler.
Mr. Thompson, I know I'm not.
Yes, go ahead, and then you can sign up later.
Oh, sure. Did I leave?
No, you're fine. I just want to make sure I speak into the microphone. My name is Scott Gessler, for the record. I'm with the law firm Hagstaff Gessler, represent in this proceeding the Colorado Petroleum Association. Although we... I think there was a thought of reserving comments until the motion for rehearing. I think it's germane, at least, to discuss this right now. Obviously, you know, at some point, anything can be a single subject. You know, control of how state government works, that could ultimately be a single subject. So there are certainly issues along those lines. But I guess I would submit that the single subject requirement requires a logical and necessary connection between provisions within a within one matter. Okay, there has to be some logical and necessary connection there. And looking at this, I'd argue that the entire matter talks about the public school improvement fund. In fact, everything talks about the public school improvement fund in here. It refers to that, except for the very last sentence here. And it's sort of, you know, where all of a sudden the severance tax fund. I mean, it seems to be that is a different item than the public school fund. Now, for that reason, I mean, I would agree that it does create some type of surprise here in this provision among voters, and that it is a different subject, because when you have sort of 95% or much of this focused on the Public School Improvement Fund and the manner in which that those funds are used and allocated. Although one can argue that there's a descriptive connection. I mean, they're both considered funds. They both have to do with monetary issues. So although there may be a descriptive connection, I argue that there's not a logical connection between the two. And a single subject does require some form of a logical connection between them. So I guess, you know, out of my comments, we would submit that Mr. Domenico's views are not necessarily idiosyncratic, but well, if they are, they are more widespread than just one person. So we'd argue that that this does not meet single subject.
And that's sort of where I am, but let me sort of lay out some thoughts about this and see what other people think. I have been trying to think in my mind, to what extent is this like the Petition Rights Amendment, Amendment 38, on the ballot this November? Because there's an example of a measure that has, I don't remember how we express a single subject, but it deals with petitions, initiative and referendum petitions. And it has a whole bunch of different things in there, which I don't think are connected to each other. I think you could take various ones out and the rest of the measure would be fine. But I think they all have a common purpose of facilitating or promoting the petition process. And here, one of the things I'm struggling with is, although I think it sounds like we can describe a subject like severance tax revenues that covers everything in the measure, but I'm struggling with what is the purpose, and I haven't yet gotten to the purpose. It's hard to think of the purpose as being just severance tax revenues. I mean, or increasing severance tax revenues or something. I haven't gotten there yet, and I'm beginning to think this is less like the Petition Rights Amendment and more like the Public Rights and Water Amendment that the Supreme Court addressed in, I think, 1995, where, as I recall, and I know Mr. Kneiser remembers this case much better than I do, and you do too, probably, Mr.
Romney, I was not involved.
Okay. In a way, it was a surprising result to me, the way I had previously been used to thinking of the single subject amendment, because I used to think, you know, maybe this is the reflection of my working for the legislature as a drafter at one point, that it's sufficient to describe a subject. And then as long as everything was under that subject, you're okay. In the public rights and water case, I think, and I don't know it well enough, but I think, you know, it was about water. Everything in there was about water. And I think most of what was in there had to do with establishment or of the public rights doctrine or something like that. But there were one or two other things that were still about water, but to the Supreme Court had a separate purpose, and so the court held that the measure violated the single subject amendment. So it wasn't good enough to describe a subject, that everything fell under that umbrella. There had to be a single purpose, and so this strikes me that it's hard to find the common purpose, that we can describe the subject but not a purpose.
The best, I guess, comparison that I can give you, and I do recall the water case, and I recall the Supreme Court's comment was water is too broad a subject. That was almost literally what they said. Fixing state government would be too broad a subject, and yet parental rights is not. So where that there is some vagueness as to where that would fall. The best comparison that I think that I can provide you here by way of analogy would be seriously Referendum C. Referendum C debruced a revenue, a specified revenue, and applied it specifically to numerous purposes, categories, roads, schools, etc. I don't recall any question of that being not a single subject, and the focus, of course, of referendum C was on the ability to use the revenue. As here, and again, I would turn the focus around, and this is the best I can do by way of comparison. comparison without belaboring it is that the focus is on the enhancement of revenues from the extraction of mineral and oil and gas resources in the state of Colorado. And then we have to say what we're going to do with it. And we're saying what we're going to do with it no different, and frankly, I think with less disparity and less opportunity for surprise or log rolling or any of those things that give rise to subject concerns than Referendum C itself posed, dealing with schools, roads, et cetera. That's the best comparison, Mr. Hobbs, that I could give you. But it doesn't belittle the logic, I think, of the argument on either side. But it certainly was the way in which that referendum operated.
Well, I'm still just, I mean, where I am right now, the subject is severance tax revenues, and I think I'm hearing you, and I'm going to put words in your mouth just a little bit, but I'm hearing you say, okay, that's the subject, but the purpose is to enhance revenues, enhance those revenues. And then I look at this last sentence, and I'm not sure how that furthers the purpose or relates to that purpose. This, whether or not you increase them, this provision deals with how you distribute the revenues.
In the same manner, and it's like a little tennis here, I guess, but I would submit in the same manner that Referendum C specified what would be done with the enhanced revenues of the state. Applies in the same way, and frankly, with less disparity than Referendum C. I again, do not mean to criticize the logic of your argument, but I don't think that is the way that law on single subject has, for better or worse, developed.
And I, you know, I'm not disregarding what you're saying about Referendum C, although in my mind there's, I feel a little differently. That I'm not sure that's a real good analogy without going into it. I'm still stuck on petition rights and the public rights and water case and so forth. Again, I see in the petition rights amendment everything had a common purpose, I believe. But here, I just see two separate purposes. But maybe I'm just wrong. I don't know. And it's unfortunate because I think it's kind of a minor. It is the very last sentence. It's just one sentence, and it's kind of a minor thing in a way, but it sounds like it really does have an effect, and it seems to me that it's unrelated to the purpose of increasing revenues. But
I don't know. I think between us, we've cited the principal cases on the topic,
mm-hmm.
the guidance we've been given, and I don't know where.
Isn't there one about judges and a measure that would have?
There were several.
Would have,
there were several. There were a series.
Yeah.
About judges.
Well, one of them that came down on the side of it was too broad or too many subjects. About you couldn't just say, well, this relates to the administration of judicial officers, and have part of it about home rule couldn't any longer control their own judges, and
exactly.
Also put this. I mean, this seems similar to that. I mean, I think we're. Everyone's logic is on the same. We're all looking at this the same way, just trying to. It's just a line drawing exercise, and maybe the. I'm not sure the precedent draws a clear line really anywhere that I've been able to read. So.
I think that's correct, and that's why these single subject challenges continue. The judicial measures, again, of which there were several. As I recall, you just hit the nail on the head. They were affecting judicial qualifications at various levels, home rule, and impacting home rule authority as constitutionally provided,
mm-hmm.
and doing other things at the same time. Somewhat akin to the idea if you say judges, it's like saying water. No, this is an ongoing discussion, that's probably one other piece of guidance. The best, again, recent piece of guidance to be consistent, again, I'm reiterating, is Referendum C. If that works, this is certainly less of a single subject problem than that was, particularly if you focus on the end of it that has to do with the revenue, either enhancement or availability.
Wickersham.
To add to that, there have been a number of measures, both at the state level and certainly at local levels, that deal with revenue and spending. And what we've seen a lot of in the past is if you identify one revenue source, if it's spent in very disparate ways, that has been okay. In 1998, there was the referendum B that was debruising $200 million annually until $1 billion. A third was given to transportation, a third was given to school capital, K-12 school capital, a third was given to higher ed. Three totally unrelated spending programs, but one revenue source. In the same way, local measures, all the time, you see a mill levy increase for, at the county level, for example, doing five different totally unrelated projects. So you see a lot of revenue measures that identify one revenue source and then spend it sometimes in very disparate ways, like also referendum C.
I'm going to belabor the point. if this were just about different ways to spend the revenue, the increased revenue, I guess, I could see that. I mean, this last sentence seems to stand alone. It seems to be have an independent purpose from the revenue increase. I mean, so there's measures that increase revenues and then maybe allow for it to be expended in multiple unrelated ways. That is okay. I see what the subject is and I see what the purpose is in a way. But here it just seems like this last sentence is unrelated to the revenues at all, unrelated to raising the revenues, enhancing the revenues,
It's related to the spending part of that question. So the enhanced revenues and then to be spent in part on preschool and school capital and the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Local Affairs program and direct distribution to counties. Those are the spending aspects identified here, the single revenue source. So that particular sentence deals with an aspect of the spending, much in the same way that from the public school fund, we're spending on preschool and school capital. From this DOLA fund, we're spending on direct distribution to counties and the energy impact grant.
Thank you. I mean, the two possibilities here is as an outcome for the single subject issue is either the board's proceed to set titles or decides not to, but either way, I think there's going to be a motion for rehearing. And so we get another chance to think about this. Practically, there's some advantage probably for setting titles now, because if the board were to decide to deny title setting and then change its mind upon motion for rehearing, there's been no consideration of the staff drafts or anybody else's drafts at all. But I suppose that should not influence my decision. For me personally, I probably shouldn't take into account those practical considerations, but rather just whether or not I think the measure violates the single subject requirement. But that's probably where I am, is that it violates the single subject requirement. So I suppose then, just to move us off the dime, somebody needs to make a motion, and I'll make a stab at it. I'll move that the board find that the measure comprises more than one subject, and that the board deny title setting for number 117.
I'll second that motion.
There a discussion? If not, all those.
I think we've already discussed the issue fully.
Okay, thank you. If not, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. So that does conclude action number 117. The time is 6:37 p.m. Thank you. I guess we should move on to 133.
Group of us.
Okay. Since it is related, Mr. Ramey.
Edward Ramey, Isaacson Rosenbaum, Mary Wickersham from the Donald K. Foundation is with me again, regarding 133, and I guess again the same disclaimer. prior associations and contests amongst us all.
Now you've had an issue with me.
Now I've had one with you, so this is...
Can I, you know, before you proceed, you know, it occurs to me, maybe going back to 117, I probably just for the record should say something about where just some supplemental information about it. There were two staff drafts. There was a version A and a version B, which hinged on whether or not Tabor requires specific language stating the amount of the annual increase in the tax increase. That's the reason for the two different staff drafts. I did ask the Office of State Planning and Budgeting to provide a fiscal estimate of the increase in case we picked version B, and we could then have some information about the amount to insert in the blank in version B. Because of the difficulty and the complexity in doing a fiscal estimate, the Office of State Planning and Budgeting has not yet been able to do that. They've indicated that they can complete that next week. And I had told them that if, in fact, the board set a title based on version A, then they could stop working on that. But it seems to me that we still potentially need a fiscal impact statement, because as far as I know, there'll be a motion for rehearing, and the board still could end up needing to decide between version A and version B and needing to know the fiscal impact. So just for the record, it's my intention to go ahead and still seek a fiscal estimate from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting.
Okay. I wish I could advise you right now whether there would be a motion for rehearing or not. I don't know. You know our preference as under, but again, I'm not sure.
Okay. Thank you. So then back to 133.
133 is focused, unlike the one we just talked about, solely on the federal minimum. What it does is, I hate to use the word enhanced revenues again, back into a similar topic, but this one really is a bit different. It reduces a credit against existing ad valorem credit against existing. No, wait.
This is mineral.
Oh, mineral lease. I'm just totally lost here. That's right. Thank you. It reallocates. It takes the. I'm going to go back to the
I believed everything you were saying.
If they're following me there, we'll be fine. It reallocates the what Ms. Eubanks, I think, one on a prior occasion referred to as a cascading allocations of revenue under the federal mineral lease provisions, and deals with one specific allocation of those revenues, again, solely for public school issues, capital construction, et cetera. I'll stop there. I don't know if there are any single subject problems that the board senses with regard to this one. I don't, but...
Okay, are there questions, Ms. Eubanks?
Of course.
Now, I am going to need Ms. Wickersham up here for that.
Well, I think you can handle this one. In terms of the changes that were made between the review and comment version versus this version, whether they were in direct response to the questions.
All of the changes were in specific response to comments made at review and comment discussions.
And then I have the same question because this measure does the same funding for the preschool programs. It doesn't specify whether it's public or private. It just says preschool programs, and so I wanted to clarify the scope of that term.
Right. It's preschool. It's unspecified if you're asking whether these preschool programs happen at public schools. It's unspecified. But in that they would be funded by public revenues, they would be counted as education. I think it would still be public preschool. But where the location of where it happens, district preschool, district preschools, or private provider preschools,
and that I was more focused at the sort of the provider level rather than the use of public revenues. for that purpose. And then she's probably going to have to come back. Because the other question I have is in regard to the subsection 2 provision, which is the allocation of the federal mineral leasing monies. And understanding that this provision is taking precedent over the existing provision for the distribution, which I can't make any sense of anyway, so I had to get my little web sheets out from last time, and I have copies of those if you want, and if the board would like them, because the issue is at times very confusing. But in contrast to the earlier measure, where there was like a change that sort of the state money that eventually went to funding stayed at a certain level unless there was a change in the reallocation, and then it went up, which had an effect on the other entities. It seems like, based on recent allocations of federal mineral leasing monies, that the 48% to the public school fund is pretty much sort of the current allocation. The 10% to the Water Conservation Board Construction Fund is the same allocation. But it appears to me, and again, this may get back to sort of that issue that was with the previous measure, it appears that it's making a change in terms of how much is going to the local government mineral impact fund, which is what the DOLA grants comes out of, versus the money that is directly distributed to impacted counties and municipalities. Am I reading that right?
Yes and no. That percent is different than the percent, say, for example, from this year. But it is not significantly different, or at all different, from percent. The cascade formula is so complex. It's a three-tiered situation where there are buckets on each level. The first-tier buckets spill over into the second-tier buckets, et cetera, et cetera. So there isn't a simple percent that goes to any.
Right.
And they can all fluctuate pretty dramatically. The percents that go into all of these buckets can fluctuate pretty dramatically from year to year, given their level of revenue. So even though the percent that goes into the government mineral impact fund this year, I believe, was 19%. In past years, it has been 15%. And 15% is the top bucket for that fund. It gets enhanced if it spills all the way down to the third level. So it's not necessarily a change with respect to the way it has ever worked. And similarly, with respect to the education bucket, it has fluctuated. The very low end of where it has ever been over the past 20 years. So what we wanted to do is assure a percent be distributed to schools. And in order to do that, you had to essentially eliminate the entire cascade. Then we just attempted to lock in percents as they as some sort of...
And I'm happy to give you all copies of this, and in terms of some figures that I pulled off of the DOLA website, and I've got copies for you. Because I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what these figures are telling me versus the... And here's a copy for you if you'd like, because, I mean, the way they categorize it on some of these sheets... And one sheet, which has the chart at the very beginning, showed 2005 as the most recent year showing distribution, whereas the other handout, which talks more about sort of the cascading formula, has 2004. But they sort of break it out in a way that's hard for me to follow in terms of knowing whether it's the grants or just direct distributions. It has a... and I'm looking at something that's referred to as slide 40 in the materials with the bar chart on the beginning, where it lists it out as terms of counties, school districts, towns, the Water Construction Board, State School Fund, and then DOLA grants. And so it's showing me DOLA grants being 25.8% of that particular year's revenues was distributed for that purpose. The 48.7%, which I think is pretty consistent with your 48% that you've got in your measure, 10% to the Water Conservation Board Construction Fund. And then there's these smaller percentages, county 6.6, 3.2 for school districts, 5.6 for towns. And so are all the DOLA grants that are in the 25.8, can you tell me whether that's the types that are made out of the Local Government Mineral Impact Fund, or does that 25.8, is that both grants and direct distributions in addition to these direct distributions that are listed above?
Yes, that is both together. And if you look at, I don't know for, oh, you're looking at the bar graph. I'm looking at this page that you're handing
out. Yeah, I'm looking
yeah.
at the numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, bar graphs don't do
you, you can see that, for example, in 1999, there was 54% given to the state school fund. So that... The 48% is actually 6% lower than that. And there's a fairly, I mean, not dramatic, but a 6 or 7% fluctuation over a 20-year period. And it's true in this particular period, we have kind of, we're seeing the high end of the DOLA grants for a number of reasons. But if you look at, for example, the five-year period below this, you would see more modest level in the DOLA grant funds. But even still, in 1999, it was 17.6%. And it was just, I mean, this is, like I said, the cascade form is so complex, and it has to deal with not only levels of revenue, but the various counties' Tabor limits and all kinds of, you know, tangential issues. And so to reduce it to a single percent scheme, which is what we wanted only just for the education portion, was a little bit of a did attempt. Hold harmless.
And
except for, I should say, except for in that we made a conscious decision to take the low end of the school amount because, as was brought up at the last title board hearing, not the last, but previous hearing on a previous measure, because the fluctuation, although the 20-year average is 52%, because of the fluctuation, if we said 52%, it produced the objection by Mr. Gessler that it could be represented as taking money from local communities because in some years it might be lower than 52%. So in order to escape that problem, we took the low end of percents going to the school fund. And because the 20-year average was 52%, that really did leave an extra 4%. That and so it was kind of trying to deal with that whole variation that has, but all the percents are, they're within reasonable reach of the percents on this page.
Okay, and then in terms of the language that's in that paragraph D about the 27%, that's sort of more the direct distribution. Is that currently the way direct distributions are done, or is this a change in the manner in which those are distributed?
It was not meant to represent a change. We said equitable instead of equal because we did not want to suggest that the legislature should absolutely just go a third, a third, a third. And as you can see from the, again, from the numbers that you see, typically you have slightly more to counties than to towns or school districts. But in that, the mandate to the legislature is simply an equitable distribution. There was nothing, there was no attempt to skew that any differently than it
currently. Further, excuse me, further questions? If not, let's turn to consideration of whether or not the measure complies with a single subject requirement. Anybody else present who wishes to testify on the single subject issue? If not, discussion by the board.
We're on
was looking at me for some reason.
And I think we may have found my line or somewhere near it. My impression is that this complies with the single subject. And I won't go into a discussion of why unless I have to.
Ms. Eubanks?
I think I'm in that same spot. I think maybe it's no surprise based on other measures that we've talked about today in terms of single subject. I don't know if I agree with the statement of the single subject that's currently in the staff draft, and primarily that's because of the allocation provision in two, because that's a change from current law affecting other things other than just sort of education funding. I also, because the preschool issue being private or public, I'm not sure we could say public education anyway, but I think it needs to be perhaps a broader statement dealing with federal mineral lease monies or something along those lines. But I do believe that the measure constitutes a single subject and that we should
support that. Is there a motion?
I would so move.
The motion is that the, and I'll second that, the motion is that the board, that the measure comprises a single subject, the board proceed to set a title. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez is projecting it on the screen in the room. Have you had a chance to look at the staff draft? Do you have any comments?
We have, Mr. Hobbs. From our perspective, the staff draft was fine. We were, unlike the last one, which you saved us some time with, this one we weren't going to tinker with at all. However, now subject to Ms. Eubanks' concerns, we may want to engage in a bit of that. I would defer to Ms. Eubanks.
Go ahead.
Sure. Make my pitch?
Sure. Make your pitch.
Okay. I don't think that the funding for preschool through 12th grade public education works, primarily because the measure is doing something broader in terms of the general distribution of the federal mineral lease monies. It, as was explained, you know, there's this cascading formula now. This measure would change it in terms of specific percentages for similar purposes. But it is a change affecting more than just funding for the portion of those monies that would be used for funding education. I also am concerned about references to public education because of the preschool issue. I agree the other purposes, the other education purposes for which the state share of the federal mineral leasing monies would be spent seems to be public education. But that one concerns me, but I think, you know, we get away from that issue if we go to something broader, whether it's concerning the use of federal mineral leasing revenues received by the state or something along that line, or even just, you know, concerning federal mineral lease monies. But
thanks. Maybe I could just pose one suggestion.
Well, I mean, I agree. We got to have that language about, you know, the revenues that the state receives from the federal government pursuant to the Mineral Lands Leasing Act, whether that's part of the single subject statement or have it down below. I'm fine with that. I wouldn't be comfortable in taking that entire phrase and putting it as the single subject statement, because I think it's doing more than just the reallocating. It's also then specifying the purposes in terms of the sort of education-related purposes. So that's why I think maybe the single subject would need to be broader than reallocation. But in terms of whether it's, you know, an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning revenues that the state receives from the federal government pursuant to the Mineral Lands Leasing Act, I'd be fine with that. It's cumbersome. I mean, we could do it shorter, sort of a short form in terms of single subject statement, but at some point I think, because most people won't know what the Mineral Lands Leasing Act is, but yet I think it's important to identify that specific revenue source, and whether you do it in the single subject statement or you have it in the details later on, I think it works either way. I think we got to give that kind of notice, but whether you use a more generalized terminology in the single subject statement, whether that's helpful to the voters up front, I don't know.
From the from the proponent's perspective, I don't think we would object. I don't think we would object to a certain
the longer
at the beginning of that, followed by and in connection therewith.
What?
Take a shot at it.
Okay, well, I think that Mr. Ramey was perhaps suggesting the language that's currently after the phrase in connection therewith. We wouldn't use the reallocating, but in terms of revenues that the state receives from the federal government pursuant to the Mineral Lands Leasing Act, that be moved up to replace the language in the single subject statement funding for preschool through 12th grade public education.
To the extent my vote on the single subject, I guess I have to get into it a little bit, was based on my understanding that the subject here is reallocating the revenues the state receives from this source in order to enhance funding for school, and we can adjust that language. But I would suggest that both of those concepts need to be in the statement of the single subject, and I would consider taking what you were suggesting, but including the reallocating, and then leaving the concerning funding or funding. And you have to connect them somehow, and perhaps in order to is the phrase you would do. But I think both those concepts are what the subject is.
I think the concern that you see is debate motivation.
Subject is the purpose of this to enhance funding for school by reallocating these funds?
The purpose of this is to reallocate the funds, and unfortunately, I guess there's the purpose is to reallocate the funds. Motivation, I guess I would say. Purposes, as you stated. Not to lead with that, as Ms. Eubanks has suggested. Finding an effective way.
If I could, and I think just because you didn't get to participate in the title board meeting on an earlier version that dealt with a lot of different components but sort of had the same purpose, that right now, in terms of this reallocation of the revenues, at least my understanding is, I think it was agreed upon that right now the state currently gets approximately 48%, or at least based on fairly recent years' distributions. That's what the state has gotten. It hasn't been concrete in terms of it will always be 48%, but that's sort of been the range. It's just that the General Assembly has decided to use federal mineral leasing monies to spend on the School Finance Act. A major, as I understand it, a major purpose of this measure is taking those same dollars and instead of allowing it to be spent on the Finance Act in terms of funding of schools, one, you have your preschool component, and two, you have your capital construction component, and three, you have your remainder, if any, flowing to the permanent school fund. So this, the concept of a reallocation may be in some respects, it's actually to the split, but sort of from a legalistic point of view, from a practical point of view, it's not really changing much, has been discussed. What it is changing is what it's spent on, at least from the state perspective. I think that's an accurate, at least that's my understanding. And so
that makes sense. Thank you for enlightening me. So we're not reallocating necessarily.
Well, it may depend on how you use that term. I mean, in terms of it is a change from current law in terms of having specific percentages mm-hmm. specified. But in terms of the actual splits, the percentages approximate what the current distribution has been the last few years. As was discussed, sometimes the state's been up 52% or something like that.
Let me make a suggestion, and you can tell me if I'm misunderstanding then. If we took the phrase beginning with the revenues that the state receives through the word act, put that after concerning. You probably don't want the semicolon to come with it.
It's been a long day, hasn't it?
Well, before you paste it, I would also insert use of.
Go ahead and paste it in the, oh, okay.
Either
whichever
way.
Use during of. The use of.
And paste. And then or, and then I guess you'd probably change the next four to of. I may still be misunderstanding the measure, but that, I think, captures my understanding of the single subject.
And I'm don't give me that look. Well, and I think what, I mean, I agree that the measure does that. I think that because it's now specifying the percentages, the specific percentages for the other purposes, the DOLA grant program, the water construction fund, whatever, that's what bothers me a little bit in terms of it makes it sound like that's the only thing it's doing, and to me, it does more because it's affecting, it's now setting those specific percentages for purposes that are unrelated to education. And that's sort of where my discomfort comes.
Banks, would you be more satisfied if we did not link those two, just stop the statement of single subject after act in line 3.
I think in terms of single subject, I think you have to.
Because there's more there than just the use for funding of preschool through 12th grade public education.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that you could have that statement later on. I understand the proponent's discomfort with that, but that's not all that the measure does. It's not, and understanding the crazy way that it all interacts because of the current distribution formula, I understand that, but they are changing the distribution formula or though even though they're going to get approximately the same amount, it is affecting the distribution of all of the federal mineral leasing act. That's just me. I'm sorry.
I think you're right that that leaving those others out may not appropriately capture it. Either get move the school discussion of schools to after the single subject, or you could do something along the lines of concerning the allocation of revenues for funding of preschool, and then make a list for funding of preschool and the other. That would, you'd end up with an and in there at some point. It would be part of a list.
Well, and you already have the list of the education purposes later on in that language that starts like line 5, where it talks about the voluntary quality preschool, the cap construction, the remainder to the permanent school fund. I mean, that's, I mean, the reference to preschool through 12th grade education is sort of a generalized statement to cover your laundry list later on.
Well, what I was getting at was if the proponents really insist on having the school, the mention of schools in the single subject mention, I think you're right that it's misleading and inaccurate not to also include the other things that that this affects. And so the list I was going to suggest would have been the list in section 2 of school fund,
okay,
local government, water conservation, and counties. And that may be difficult to do, but that was what I was...
Okay, I'm sorry.
It would be easier and probably wiser to do what you're suggesting and move that to after the single subject.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I followed all the discussion, but from what I've heard, I think it makes sense to drop the language about preschool for 12th grade public education, express the single subject as basically have this up to that point. It's the use of revenues that the state receives from the federal government pursuant to the mineral lands leasing, in connection therewith. And we've got the list of got the provisions that require a portion of those funds to be used for educational purposes. I'm guessing then we need to say something about the allocation. But at least with respect to the statement of the single subject, how much more we can cramming in there, or it's no longer an expression of a single subject.
Our preference not to extend this. Plus, there's something misleading about doing that. I think if we specify that we are doing something to those other allocations, there's a historical percentage. Not.
stick with the language suggested, but then on line 3, after act.
Mm-hmm. Where I am, does that make sense?
I'm much more comfortable with that language being removed.
Then we need to also delete reallocating the...
So I would move the changes as reflected in the staff draft.
Second that. Further discussion? Make other changes, but... Yeah.
If there's no other discussion on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
Other changes to the staff draft? Ms. Eubanks?
I have a question for Mr. Ramey, and I know why it's done this way in terms of the measure basically starting in 09-10 in terms of the state monies being allocated for preschool cap construction. I believe probably that it's related to our previous discussion on an earlier measure about sort of the phase out of the impact of doing this on the revenues currently used, the federal mineral leasing monies currently used for the School Finance Act. Do you think? Because right now, the way the title's drafted, it makes it seem like it's immediate, and whether or not you should put something in about, you know, starting in fiscal year 2009-10 so people know that this is, because it isn't mandatory until that point of time. Is that my understanding of the measure?
You're absolutely right. I would just say, though, the language by at least state phase in at the discretion of the general assembly. So I think to say starting in 09-10, possibility of the general assembly, they could do it next year.
So if we more followed the language of the measure in terms of by at least, or I mean, I just don't want people to have the impression, although it's possible, I don't know how likely it is. And so for them to know that this may not be happening right away. And so...
I think that would be fine. Want to insert?
So if we...
By at least
fiscal year 2009-10? We could put it before, or we might be able to put it in after on line 6 to be used by at least fiscal year 2009-10 to provide. Either way, I think. So, Ceci, if you...
Right there?
Yeah.
Where the cursor is?
Yeah. So if we say by at least... fiscal year... I don't think I'd be doing any better typing. You're doing a great job. 2009-10...
Give it a zero.
I would move that change.
Second that. A little awkward, but I think it's like an important principle. This is not going to happen right away, necessarily. I don't know of a better placement or better wording. Further discussion? If not, Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
And then, again, another question. In terms of the spending of the interest off of the permanent school fund, do you think it's important to indicate, same as the measure states, that that the interest be used for these purposes in addition to the to other current funding requirements or something? I mean, in terms of that concept,
I think the point of the new is, if I'm understanding your concern correctly, I think if I'm understanding your concern correctly, the word new addresses new, not ones that, or maybe I'm missing.
Well, maybe, maybe new does it. I just view it, right now interest earnings get spent for school finance. We want this to be on top of whatever they decide to spend, whatever they have to spend for school finance. My understanding, you want this interest to be spent for something else, some other type of educational program. And so I guess in my mind, not that I have one left anymore, but in terms of whether that concept of new imparted that to me, having specific subject matter knowledge, I don't know what it might mean to the voters. I don't know, if you add something about, in addition to other current funding requirements, I don't know if that, but it seems like an important part of that concept is you're wanting it to be spent on other educational purposes other than what it's currently being spent on. So, and
exactly. Phrase you just used, I don't
think. Okay.
Sort of suggest, at least as I heard it, maybe the interest was going to be used. I think we're certainly open to modifying the concept, but that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at your measure, it says all interest generated from the permanent school fund shall be allocated each state fiscal year to fund preschool through 12th grade educational programs. It doesn't say new. And then it says which may include but are limited to lowering the dropout rate, purchase textbooks, attract and retain qualified quality teachers. Allocations of interest must be in addition to other education funding requirements as of a certain date. And so that's why I guess new didn't, because it doesn't really say, they purchase textbooks now. And so I don't know that that's a new educational program. It's just that it's funding something that, I'm not trying to put words in the proponent's mouths, but it's funding something other than that what is currently funded through the School Finance Act, if I understand correctly. So that's why I'm sort of struggling.
On top of current programs or current otherwise established funding.
Well, and see what the part of the problem or the connection is in terms of this idea of current funding requirements is that because of Amendment 23 and the funding requirements imposed for funding schools in general, which is what gets funded through the School Finance Act, and so that's, they're basically saying use the interest for educational purposes other than satisfying your funding requirement under Amendment 23.
Can't count towards.
At least that's my understanding.
Can't count towards
right.
Meeting Amendment 23.
Which is right now what the interest earnings is used for. It's used to meet the state's obligation under Amendment 23. So
I think you stated that just perfectly.
And I think you made a good point about you certainly don't want to imply with the word new that these are kind of novel concepts or programs that are
not currently done. They're probably trying to attract quality teachers now.
Right.
Hopefully.
So maybe something like to fund additional instead of new?
I don't.
Well, what if, I think what the current phraseology refers kind of to the first sentence that Ms. Eubanks quoted, but what we're focusing on now is what's really the important change is the second sentence, and that really has less to do with what kind of programs we're talking about and more to do with legal requirements. So it seems to me that clause requires a bit more rewriting than that. And what about something like requiring interest from the permanent school fund to be allocated in addition to any other education funding requirements? And then we could get back into whether we should put a current law or the date or anything. I mean, that seems to be the big point, right? That it's...
That's accurate.
Okay. So
can you say it again?
Can I make a... Yeah, let me say it again.
Please.
So, right, after allocated, just say this is straight out of the measure, allocated in addition to other education funding requirements. And then the measure says as of November 7, 2006, and we can get back into whether it would be better to say
current law
under current law.
To other
area.
Other education funding requirements under current law.
Yeah. Under current law.
Poor Ceci has to try to decipher. And then you'd strike the remainder
strike
of that language.
Strike the rest
language.
Of that sentence.
Good with that.
The only that's the language in the measure. It would make more sense to me to say any other education funding requirements. I'm not really sure why, but I just throw that out for people's consideration.
I'm fine with that too.
Right.
Is that a motion?
I will move that we make all of those changes.
Second.
Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Staff draft. Not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
I would so move.
I'll second it.
For the record, I'll read it into the record. Ceci, maybe turn it off. The changes. So the motion is that the title is fixed by the board would read as follows: an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning use of revenues that the state receives from the federal government pursuant to the, quote, Mineral Lands Leasing Act, unquote, comma, and comma, in connection therewith, comma, requiring a portion of the federal mineral revenues to be used by at least fiscal year 2009-2010 to provide low-income children the opportunity to attend voluntary quality preschool programs, comma, to provide funding for preschool through 12th grade public school renovations or construction, comma, and to add to the permanent school fund, semicolon, and requiring interest from the permanent school fund to be allocated in addition to any other education funding requirements under current law, period, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that begins in what is now line 9.
have a semicolon comma problem?
No,
there's
not possible.
The one semicolon in there, it seems to me, after school fund in line 7. And
I think that would be appropriate to set off that phrase versus the next one and requiring interest. It's sort of
I think
what
so. There's basically two clauses here, I think, after this expression of the single subject. There's a long one, and it goes from line 3 to line 7, semicolon, and then there's one more. I sort of like the semicolon because it's kind of compound with multiple commas.
Well, believe me, I really hate to do this, but the two, all the twos in there, the refer to what? That's what I'm confused by. Is the first clause is requiring a portion of the mineral revenues, and then the two after 2010 and next three twos, to provide low-income children, to provide funding, and to add to the permanent school fund. Am I reading it correctly that that all refers to why you're requiring a portion of the federal mineral revenues be used in a certain way? And then I think that's what you're saying, and that, I guess, makes sense. And then the separate issue is what you do with the interest. Okay.
That was my
all right. I think that makes sense.
But I have another issue to raise. I'm sorry. Do we need to add a phrase describing the provisions of subsection 2, which is the actual percentages specified for in terms of the actual allocation of the federal mineral leasing monies? I mean, that's sort of why, I mean, we did the single subject statement the way we did.
Thanks. Can I address that for just a second? I'll take my concern with doing that. I mean, first, I think you're right. That's why we did the other adjustment. But secondly, I think it's important from our perspective not historical sense, we're not.
But you are changing the law.
We are changing the law, but if we do what you're, and I think that's why we made the adjustment, but there's something that there's a misleading, inherent misleading component. Spelling out, I think, where I think you're going, what you're about to suggest. So I'm just going to leave that thought with the board, but I think that's one reason.
And I understand that concern, but and on the other hand, I mean, you are changing from the cascading formula now to specific percentages, and whether or not we need to at least give some notice of that, that that's part of what people are doing, is that they're changing, even though from in a real sense everyone's getting approximately the same share as they're currently getting, but you are changing the law to be specific numbers, so you won't have this variation anymore that the public school fund is always going to get 48%. It's not going to be 52 in some years. And so whether it's, you know, language talk, you know, just specifying the percentages or the split or the distribution of federal mineral lease money, I don't know, but I mean, that is a change, and I think that if we don't say something, then I think you're susceptible to challenge on that basis. Maybe if you want to take the risk, but
would it address your concern with you guys if we did something? Try not to walk from one tarp in terms of what might be misleading, but something like concerning state receipts?
No, because even if you did that, I think you got to give the details down below. I mean, and I think maybe you're okay in terms of the current statement, a single subject. It's just you need to say something down below to give some notice as to this change in law that you're making.
What if it just said, and setting a fixed percentage allocation of the funds received, or how are such funds received from the federal government for various purposes?
Yeah, I don't know that it has to be any more than that, but
The concern is we don't want to say reallocating like we're making a change, but the change that we are making is fixing the percentages. And if we say and fixing the percentages or and setting the percentages without saying that that's a change.
That may work.
Yeah, I mean.
I think it avoids the concern.
And I understand. I just think, you know, we got to give some notice of this law change.
Fixing seems to sort of capture what's actually happening, right? As opposed to setting or something, it captures the idea that these are approximations of the current allocations.
Well, I don't think we would object to that.
Put it at the end. You got to remove the "and" on line 7, but then add another phrase.
Yeah.
I think that works. What were you saying? I didn't want to have
delete
that. Really
delete and.
Right.
Show the.
And we'll consider the previous motion withdrawn.
Yes, I withdraw my motion. I'm sorry.
And then I think you put a semicolon before the period. Right at the very end, yeah. And then, and fixing. Allocation percentages or percentage allocations or. And fixing percentages various state funds
make the percentage singular so that you say and fixing the percentage of
such
the federal mineral revenues, and it should be fixing the percentage. Of the federal mineral revenues allocated
it should be allocated.
Well, it doesn't all go to funds. There's a portion that's
some
direct
goes
distribution.
To counties, yeah.
Well, the direct distribution doesn't go through a fund.
Yeah, to state funds and county and to counties and certain state funds, or to various
allocated. I'm fine with that. Allocated to certain state funds and local governments. I'm open to any suggestion at this point. And local government.
Yeah, I think that's.
Although, Water Conservation Board Construction Fund, a state fund, or is that a special purpose?
Delete the state.
Authority. Well, no, I.
Let's just get rid of
state. I can't remember whether it's actually a special purpose authority or a. My guess is it's a special purpose authority to certain funds. I'd say, certain
state
funds in local governments.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't.
Yeah.
And it's a period.
Right.
I don't know if I did put put it in and then deleted it.
Yeah.
Why is it percentage singular and not percentages? Is that correct?
I guess I was thinking the percentage for each fund or local government. If you think it should be plural, I'm fine with that too.
I think it's better actually plural, because this suggests that some of it may be going to elsewhere besides these funds and governments.
Is that a motion?
I'll move that we make that change.
I'll second that. So that the new clause would read, "In fixing the percentages of the federal mineral revenues allocated to certain funds and local governments," period. And inserting the word "and" in line 9.
Deleting
it.
I'm sorry, deleting. Thank you. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I neglected, just I just want to double check, is there anybody else who wants to testify concerning the staff changes to the staff draft? Then, if there are no other changes, I'll entertain again a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Domenico and seconded by Ms. Eubanks.
Do you need to read it?
Yeah, I think I need to read the whole thing again, so if we could turn off the changes. The motion then is that the title would read as follows: "An amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning use of revenues that the state receives from the federal government pursuant to the quote Mineral Lands Leasing Act quote unquote comma and comma in connection therewith comma requiring a portion of the federal mineral revenues to be used by at least fiscal year 2009-2010 to provide low-income children the opportunity to attend voluntary quality preschool programs, comma, to provide funding for preschool through 12th grade public school renovations or construction, comma, and to add to the permanent school fund, semicolon, requiring interest from the permanent school fund to be allocated in addition to any other education funding requirements under current law, semicolon, and fixing the percentages of the federal mineral revenues allocated to certain funds and local governments," period. And again, same changes in the ballot title and submission clause. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 133, and the time is 7:41 p.m. And I think we have one other item on our agenda to deal with. Do we need a break, or can we go to number 125? Okay, we had previously laid over number 125. It was the fourth item on our agenda, but we've laid it over a couple times since the proponents were not present. Are the proponents present, or representatives of the proponents? I think we are probably obligated to consider it, notwithstanding the absence of the proponents, so we don't have anyone to ask questions of. I think I'll go ahead and just jump to consideration of whether the measure complies with a single subject requirement, and then ask if there's any anyone who wishes to testify on that question. Yes, sir. If you'll identify yourself with the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. My name is Ken Wanstall, and I'm general counsel for the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. And I have a number of questions relating to the vagueness and breadth of this proposal that I think goes so far as to make the expression of a single subject impossible. Get into those now. Bleed over into whether or not you can do a title that expresses the intent and purpose of this. I think it's so defective that there can't be a single subject defined for that, so it may be the time to bow into that.
Well, I think it could be relevant to whether or not the board can set a title. There's some case law precedent for the proposition that if the measure is so unclear that the board cannot understand it well enough to understand whether or not there's a single subject, then that's relevant. I mean, if it's not clear enough, which not that we have to, in my understanding, not necessarily we have to understand exactly what the measure means, but can we understand it well enough to express a single subject?
I think my comments probably go towards that.
Okay.
I'll note at the start that there was a 5 or 6 pages of specific questions prepared by legislative counsel for their review memorandum. It doesn't appear to me that the proponents have addressed or answered any of those questions submitting their final language. And starting just with the very first concept here of a mineral extractor, I think there is great question as to what parties exactly constitute the mineral extractor. Clearly, there are at least 3 parties who could be so identified, and some of this comes out of the legislative council drafting, but the owner of the mineral interest could potentially be the mineral extractor, the lessee of the owner, common way of property owner allocating or assigning the right to develop the mineral, and there could be an operator, whether a drilling contractor or in another context, an operator of the project that has no property interest. So it is unclear right from the get-go as to who is being addressed here. Certainly, it could be any one of those 3 or all 3, and at that point, question is, are they individually liable or is there a joint and several liability here? Note also that in the legislative council memorandum, the question was raised as to whether they recited all the definitions from various Mine Land Reclamation Act, the Construction Materials Act, the Oil and Gas Act, as to try and suggest some potential definition for this mineral extractor term. And with respect to construction materials or sand and gravel, those interests are acquired from the surface estate and not from the mineral estate. So it's not clear even if we're limiting ourselves to traditional mineral estate property interest or whether we're looking in the common vernacular at rock, which would certainly be sand and gravel. So I think that's the first huge issue, is just who is the mineral extractor? Single mineral extractor, are there multiple extractors, are they individually liable, or are they jointly and severally liable? Then, of course, the question then, who gets paid? It just says the mineral extractor shall pay. It doesn't say to whom. That could be another mineral owner. In the oil and gas context, for instance, there are multiple owners with what are called correlative rights to the resource. In other contexts, there could be joint tenancy rights, tenancy in common in the minerals. Is this intended to appeal the rule of capture, for instance, in oil and gas? Oil and Gas Commission establishes what they call drilling and spacing units, essentially pools the minerals in there, and one party goes in and produces the minerals. Have they now converted those minerals to their use? Is the Oil and Gas Commission spacing order a defense against liability? There is a provision in state law to involuntarily pool without the consent mineral owners in the spacing and drilling units? Is that a defense against producing their minerals? Are we repealing the conservation law of Colorado? That's just if we look at paying damages, underground damages or subsurface damages to other mineral owners. Then, of course, we have surface owners where states may or may not be severed. Is it the surface owner where the extraction activity occurs? In that regard, does it matter whether or not that surface owner also happens to own the minerals and may have granted a lease to develop the minerals? Are they still entitled to a payment even though they have leased the right to develop the minerals? Does it matter whether there has been a surface use agreement established, either supplemental to the lease or in a situation where the surface owner is severed and did not have a lease? And there are neighboring property owners. Some neighboring property owners might assert that an operation has interfered with their view or their use and enjoyment of their property, or perhaps has devalued their property. So we have another question here, whether these payments are limited to subsurface damage, surface damage, direct damage to the surface owner where the operation occurs, or to neighboring property owners. The next question is, and of course when in the earlier value, in the earlier version, there had been a fair market value, and they dropped the word market out of here, so if anything, now the question of fair value becomes less clear, because at least we had a fair market value in an earlier version. Now we don't know if it's market value, cost, income, replacement value, so all kinds of questions on that. What are the damages? I would note that in the text of the proposal, it talks about the damages brought about in the development, pursuit, or extraction. I'm guessing there are three different activities that can generate the damages, and the title that's been suggested just talks about the development, so certainly that doesn't capture the language of the proposal itself. What is the pursuit of a mineral? How does that give rise to damages? That between oil and gas companies who have executed an area of mutual interest agreement and now believe that one company has gone in reached that agreement? Is that where there's a first right of refusal and someone has is now alleging they should have had the first right to buy a lease or do a farm out? Is that the pursuit? Is it seismic operations where you go and vibrations in the ground by one means or another? Exploratory wells? Is it surveying? Is it satellite imagery? Geomagnetic surveys, lots of things to be considered under pursuit. The damages part, this is a huge issue because this measure in itself doesn't appear to change the existing law on damages. And in Colorado, that would largely constitute that there would be no requirement to pay damages unless the use of the surface was, quote, unreasonable. Aerial extent or in the nature of the operation. And there is a right to use as much of the surface as is reasonably necessary to develop the minerals. If that is the extent of the development of the minerals, does that give rise to damages? There isn't no direction here as to whether we're changing that law or not. The leading case in Colorado, the Gertie v. Magnus case, established the parameters for actions and negligence and trespass. Those are in the law today. Talking about that, there's a doctrine called the accommodation doctrine, which is largely an equitable doctrine, which says the operator has to give due regard to the competing surface uses. Is that being converted from equitable doctrine to a legal remedy of damages by this? Are we creating a new legal cause of action? Is this to be determined by the courts? Is this to be determined by the legislature? After all, a constitutional provision. No provision authorizing or requiring the legislature to explain it, and I'm not sure they could limit this concept if it's just put in the Constitution in this form. But then we'd be into the courts to decide what this means. How does this relate to the current jurisdiction given to the Oil and Gas Commission to protect unleased mineral owners against unreasonable crop loss or land damage and the bond provisions that they administer? Is it limited to physical damages to the land? Or can we have health claims, psychological distress claims here, speculative development value claims? When does a damage claim vest? Operators to go and drills a well in a hay field today, 8 years down the road or 10 years down the road, land developer comes to the hay farmer and says, I want to buy your land for condominium development, but this well reduces your value. You have a claim that vests at some point in the future down the road. Is this potentially going to bring a natural resource damage claim? Damages brought about in the development of oil and gas. We have seen a very interesting case filed by an environmental group against the National Safety Transportation Board, which approved a railroad, new railroad line from the coal fields in Wyoming to utility in Minnesota to bring coal to a coal-burning power plant. And a suit has been brought alleging that this would be a cause of global warming by facilitating the burning of additional coal and therefore create resource damages. Opening up that possibility with this very broad and vague language. So that's a quick run through of what we think is entirely vague and overbroad, undefined measure that really cannot be reduced to a title other than the 25 words that are here. It's a way to condense it further because there's so little here to begin with. That I'll stop briefly and entertain any questions you might have.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Wonstolen? I don't think I have any questions. I'm digesting in my mind, and I do. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the question of single subject compliance? Mr. Gessler?
If I could just supplement a few comments. My name, for the record again, is Scott Gessler, law firm Hagstaff Gessler. Is, you know, with respect to the ambiguity of the pursuit, damages caused by the pursuit of an extraction of a mineral, I mean, I was just sort of thinking, you know, how could that be interpreted? You know, for example, if there was aerial photography that was sort of close up of a particular piece of property, that could be considered an invasion of privacy in some instances. Pursuit, and there could possibly be damages from that as well. So the breadth and ambiguity of this statute, I think we could all come up with more anecdotes, or I should say, you know, hypotheticals here. But I think that just sort of serves to reinforce the point that it's very difficult to understand exactly where this ends or exactly what it does.
There is a case in Colorado where somebody was drilling a well and for a particular horizon for which they had the right to develop, and sometimes you actually have severance of the mineral horizons. Just surface, but different ownership at different depths. But going through an intervening horizon, taking the normal readings that you do when you're drilling a well, they basically found no conductor potential in the intervening horizon. There was a suit and recovery granted because they had essentially hemmed the value of that intervening horizon going through that. As subsurface damages, and certainly this is broad enough to include those kind of subsurface damages as well.
Maybe I do have a question, or I don't know for sure whether it's a question or a comment, but part of the thought process I'm going through here is to, you know, with respect to all of the questions, I mean, you've listed a great many questions about the measure. I'm wondering in my mind, you know, does knowing the answer to any of those questions
if I knew the answer to any of those questions, would it change or affect my opinion about whether or not this measure comprises more than just one subject? And I'm not sure that any of those questions, that their answers would change my mind. You know, it's a 2.5 line measure. It's just states, there's just one sentence. There's lots of questions about what it means, how it works, what the terms mean, and so forth. But the basic subject seems to be fairly singular, regardless of the individual of the meaning or the effects. But just if you it would help me perhaps to go in the direction I think you want me to go in. If you could tell me how the answer to any of those questions would suggest multiple subjects. I mean, what would be two different subjects in this measure that's not under the general subject of damages from mineral extractors?
Well, potentially whether or not it's applicable to subsurface damages and surface damages, whether it is.
But it's just damages. I mean, does it matter the particular kinds of damages or whatever? Maybe I'm not making myself
clear.
Well,
I think, as we heard before, as Mr. Penico said, you could get so general that it's hard to say that you could fit anything under that. I think that's essentially where we are here, something that's so general and so broad that you could fit anything under it. And at that point, I think the question I would ask the board to consider is whether or not you can set a title that fairly warns the voters as to what it is they're voting. I didn't even bring up here is, could the mineral extractor, does that include the federal government and its minerals, the state land board of Colorado and its minerals, dedicated to public school funding? Are we repealing the doctrine of sovereign immunity with respect to damages caused brought about by the development of those minerals? The title is, and I think it's intended to be so broad and vague that it's everything. But at that point, I think you're simply not giving the voters any sort of sense what they're voting on.
It still strikes me as being a fairly narrow subject. It's not concerning water. It's not concerning severance taxes. It's pretty narrow. I mean, I'm not trying to judge what the answer to the individual questions about meaning and effects and so forth. But I'm still stuck on just trying to figure out how would it be multiple subjects. This simple language, as unclear as it may be.
In my own head, I'm trying to decide, you know, should I talk about it in the single subject context, or should I talk about it in the other context, or can you set a title that fairly accurately conveys to the voters what it's doing? Say, well, it's written in so few words, it's only one subject, fine. But at that point, I think you really have to decide whether you set a title that, in any sense, complexities and ambiguities that's inherent in this measure.
I mean, and related to this, is it possible that if this simple statement were enacted into the Constitution, that the General Assembly could refine it, could answer those questions statutorily through implementing legislation?
I don't know. I could see a situation where if I felt I had a constitutional damage claim, it wouldn't matter what the General Assembly did with the statute, because I've got a constitutional damage claim.
And you could challenge the constitutionality of implementing legislation, but I don't want to infer from what you're suggesting that proponents have an obligation to put everything about their measure in the Constitution or to flesh it all out, that the General Assembly doesn't have a role to play. That it may be that the proponents in this case listened to the questions from the legislative staff and chose not to answer them, and leaving that to either statutory law or case law, and is maybe that's their right to do. At least, again, if it's a single subject, they don't necessarily have to answer those questions in their measure.
I guess I note again that at least in the suggested title, doesn't even include the minimal list of damage claims that could be brought under the actual measure, which includes pursuit, extraction, brought about in the development. So the title as proposed is missing a very little ability there.
Well, in thinking about this, let me sort of lay out some thoughts, but I'm not quite sure where I'm going to end up. I'm looking at some of my notes about some of the single subject cases decided by the Supreme Court. And in one case, and it's Outselt versus Bruce number 25, decided in 1999, the court indicated that that where the board cannot resolve questions about the measure's effect, this isn't a quote, I'm just reading my notes, but because, and this is a key point to me though, but where the board cannot resolve these questions because of the difficulty and complexity of the language, it must not adopt a title, even though this was a single subject discussion. There's one case. Another case that I have notes about, Percy versus Embury in 2000, the court kind of went the other way on a similar question, I think, where someone challenged an initiative where titles were set on, but the petitioner challenged the measure on single subject grounds and alleged that conflicting provisions within the initiative made its effects unclear and that the board must understand how the proposal works. The court determined that the petitioner's arguments required the court to determine the legal effects of the initiative, and I think this is a quote from the court. We have consistently held that it is not the purview of this court to determine the efficacy, construction, or future application of an initiative in the process of reviewing the actions of the title board and setting titles for proposed initiatives. Such matters are more appropriately addressed in a proper case if the voters approve the initiative. There, where there were a lot of things that were unclear, at least allegedly, the court didn't feel like that necessarily created a single subject problem. So what's the difference between the two? In both cases, there were allegations that there were unclear effects, questions about the measure. In the first case, again, I give great weight to the idea that measure that was before the court in that case was had very difficult and complex language. And as I recall, it was very hard to even understand what the words meant. Here, I mean, I have lots of questions. I agree, there's lots of questions about it, but the language, it's a very simple measure. It's not a complex measure compared to the one in 1999, and I'm not sure it's the same kind of thing. On the one hand, to kind of cut to the chase, I'm inclined to think this is a single subject. But on the other hand, in the absence of the proponents here to answer questions about the meaning, I'm inclined to resolve the benefit of the doubt against the proponents here, because if we'd had the benefit of being able to ask the proponents questions, I believe my mind might be changed. I just don't know. We would have had that discussion, and it might have led me elsewhere. I mean, just based on what I've heard so far, I'm not sure there's more than one subject, but it does bother me that the proponents are not here to answer questions about the measure. So, any discussion by the board?
Well, I agree that the vagueness in this makes it difficult to comprehend how it would play out, and I share everyone's seeming confusion about whether that means that there's a single subject problem or a problem with being able to set a meaningful title. I think going back to kind of the things I was trying to get at in some of my discussion of single subject before, I think there's the, can you even come up with a broad general subject that this fits under? As we've pointed out, that's not difficult to do, I don't think, in any case, and I think this clearly meets that. There's also the, where I was having a problem earlier, the issue of whether within that broad subject you're really seeking to accomplish more than one thing, multiple purposes.
In this case, I don't think you have that problem. I think it is a single subject in that sense. I think I may still have a problem with the setting a title for it that conveys to people what it's going to do. But I don't think it's because it doesn't comprehend a single subject. I think it's because it may be so vague as to be possible to convey, even if we simply quoted it and did nothing more, which I think is the only way we can set a title. But I'll save that for a minute.
I do tend to agree, by the way, with the statement that either we don't set the titles or we kind of quote what the measure says. But Ms. Eubanks, do you have any thoughts?
A few, which is hard to muster at this point. But I think I'm in agreement in terms of single subject. I recognize the difficulties caused by the vagueness of the measure, but there's been many times where measures have been before us where we haven't understood exactly how it might be implemented or exactly what its impact may be. And yet, I think from the text of the measure itself, we can say what that single subject is, exactly how it's stated, other than maybe a little tweaking from sort of just a restatement of the measure. I think that may be about all we can do at this point. But in terms of single subject, I don't believe that provides us a grounds for not setting the title, as I believe it constitutes.
Well, and it really is hard for me. I just go back to maybe what I think was my original comment about this. Nothing I've heard so far suggests to me multiple purposes, that there are separate purposes here. And though there's the degree of vagueness I'm not unclear about, but I just don't hear anything suggesting multiple purposes. And then if that's the case, I feel obligated to set a title. And then, as Mr. Domenico pointed out, if you do that, you pretty much have to just repeat the language of the measure without knowing the answer to any of these questions about the meaning and effects. Now, I think, Mr. Domenico, you were somewhere in between of that.
Well, the only difference I have there is my understanding is we... And again, I don't know if I should call this a single subject problem, but we can, I believe, not set a title to a measure if we can't comprehend it, even if we can sort of figure out that it fits under some very general single subject or even a specific one. If it's incomprehensible, I believe there's language from the court saying if we can't comprehend it, then by definition it's impossible for us to set a title. And so I don't know where that fits in with whether it's a single subject problem. But I also think there's a lot more case law saying that mere vagueness of terms or terms that are left to be defined in the future by this legislature or by courts, that's not enough to make it incomprehensible. So I think I do want to get the idea out there that if we truly can't comprehend what's going on, we don't have to set a title, and I'm not sure where that fits with the single subject. I don't think I'm quite ready to say that. I think I understand the idea of this, but I agree that most, if not all, of the important terms are going to have to be defined in the future, but I'm not sure that that gives us the authority not to set a title. So wherever we are in the process, that's just my thinking.
Well, it's a tough one. One of the statements from the court about the test for single subject is whether the measure comprises more than one subject.
and whether there's more than one separate and distinct purposes unconnected to each other. And it does strike me that there's one subject here. Whatever this means, there's one subject, and I can't identify separate and distinct purposes. So I guess I'm still inclined to find that the measure comprises a single subject. And I guess, well, Ms. Eubanks?
You ready for a motion?
Sure.
Okay. I think the measure comprises a single subject, and I move that the title board proceed to set a title.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen. And let's consider the adequacy of the staff draft. Mr. Wonstolen, do you want to comment on the staff draft, or is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on the staff draft?
I think Mr. Domenico had it correct. Okay. Is there anything I thought about earlier today?
It should say, in connection therewith, failing to specify the meaning of any of the terms. Who, what body shall supply such meaning? That would be
such
an accurate
authority.
Description of exactly what the voters are being asked to adopt here. Stepping into a new and undefined galaxy.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks?
To get us started, consistent with the title board's past practice, I don't think we usually have a specific reference to the article of the Constitution being amended, so I would move to strike the language, the reference to Article 18 of...
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
One of the problems I have with the staff draft is just making a statement concerning the payment of a mineral extractor of fair value of damages doesn't really, to me, impart the purpose or the effect of the measure, at least from the words of the measure itself. It seems like it's a requirement. And so, I mean, concerning could be most anything about payment of damages, whereas I think being a requirement is an important concept, and so I would move changing the word concerning to the word requiring.
Second that. Further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
And then my last concern is on line 3, in terms of the reference to development of a mineral and whether or not we should include the other language from the measure in terms of its development, pursuit, or extraction of a mineral. I'm not sure that the title is currently worded covers everything. Not that I know what these terms mean, but it seems that to at least use the same terms, whether or not in terms of single subject, you know, because you've got the three items, but I think that's fine and that it tracks the language of the measure, which I think is the best we can do at this point. So I guess I would move on line 3, after development, inserting a comma, then the word pursuit. Comma, or extraction. And I move that change.
Second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Um, I guess I'll suggest, it's a little awkward the way it's worded right now, and this may, I have a suggestion, I think, that gets us even closer to this, to the language of the measure itself. Instead of saying requiring the payment by a mineral extractor, maybe we need to say requiring a mineral extractor to pay the fair market value. I think it's simpler language, and I think it's faithful. So requiring a mineral extractor to pay the fair market, or to pay the fair value. A motion.
I'll second the motion.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the staff draft? Ms. Banks?
I would move that the title board adopt the staff draft as amended.
I'll second that. Let me just read that into the record then. The title then would read, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution requiring a mineral extractor to pay the fair value of damages brought about in the development, comma, pursuit, comma, or extraction of a mineral, period. The understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause. Any further discussion? Not. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 125. The time is 8:20 p.m. I think we've covered all of the agenda items, but in case I got lost, does anybody disagree? Not? Then I think we're adjourned. Thank you all.